Andrew, because the latest revelations about his links to the paedophile Jeffrey Epstein have been overshadowed by the conversation about the future of this country's Prime Minister. Today, though, the King and Queen were heckled over the Andrew scandal during a visit to Essex. So tell me this hour, what do you make of how the royal family have handled this controversy? Has it changed your view of them in any way? And could this be the beginning and the end of the monarchy?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, Sir Keir Starmer's fighting for his political future this evening, apologising for falling for Peter Mandelson's lies over Jeffrey Epstein. The Prime Minister says he regrets appointing him as his ambassador to the US and denies knowing the depths of the two men's relationship. Former Tory Cabinet Minister Lord Michael Gove told LBC he does have some sympathy for Sir Keir, but says the public won't.
People will think, well, you're the Prime Minister, you should have had access to this information. You should have known that he was unreliable. There were career diplomats whom you could have appointed. At the very least, you were too clever by half and favoured Labour's interests or your own clique's interests over the national interest. At worst, your judgement has once again proved to be deficient.
Peter Mandelson's previously denied any wrongdoing. A 15-year-old boy has been arrested on suspicion of attempted murder after a teacher was attacked. Officers were called to Milford Haven Primary School in Pembrokeshire. Police say the teacher's injury was not a stab wound. Police have named a university student who died after being stabbed near to a campus. Khalid Oladipo, who was from London, died in hospital after being attacked near De Montfort University in Leicester. LBC's Midlands reporter George Ike has more.
The family of Mr. Oladipo have released a tribute. They said they cannot begin to put into words how sad they are to have lost him. They described him as an extremely loved son, brother, uncle, boyfriend and friend. They said how one of his main passions was football and he'd played since the age of four. They said he was also an Arsenal supporter and believe he was on his way home to watch the game later that evening.
Donald Trump says he's had very productive discussions with Keir Starmer about the island of Diego Garcia, which is part of the Chagos Islands. He says he retains the right to militarily secure and reinforce the American presence there should the lease deal ever fall apart. The cost of borrowing has been held at 3.75%, with the Bank of England suggesting rate cuts could come later this year. That's because the 2% inflation target may be hit sooner than expected. In the city, the FTSE 100's closed down 93 points at 10,309. The pound buys $1.35 and €1.14. LBC weather. Cloudy in the north tomorrow with rain turning to snow on the hills in eastern areas. Drier with some sunny breaks to the west. Cloudy with showers further south, a high of 11 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Daryl Jackson.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Ben Kentish.
It's 2 minutes after 10. Hello there. A very, very good evening indeed this Thursday night. Ben Kentish here with you on LBC right through until 1 o'clock Friday morning. Lovely to have you with us this evening. On tonight's show,
I am sorry. Sorry for what was done to you. Sorry that so many people with power failed you. Sorry for having believed Mandelson's lies and appointed him.
Keir Starmer apologises for taking Peter Mandelson at his word as the Prime Minister battled to save his job. Will it be enough, though? Look at that later in the hour. Plus,
if you make something unique or special and then you suddenly have everybody having that thing, the faster queue just becomes as long as the original queue.
Alton Towers is going to ban people with ADHD and anxiety from joining the disabled queue in a move that has left some people, at least, very unhappy. But is it the right decision? And how disabling are those conditions, really, if you've got one of them? We'll talk more about that after 11 tonight. And
the little pigeon cyborg then wears a solar-powered backpack, which carries a controller preloaded with a flight path.
Why Russia might soon be using brain chips to send cyborg pigeons into battle in Ukraine. You did hear that right, I kid you not. Bring the very, very strange details indeed a little later on.
Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. This is LBC.
for the time, very good evening indeed to you. We will talk later this hour about the growing pressure on the Prime Minister over his decision to appoint Peter Mandelson. But if there is one person in this country that perhaps is slightly relieved at how that news story has exploded this week, then it is, I would put to you, the man who was known for most of his life as Prince Andrew. Because the whole saga, the whole controversy about that decision by our Prime Minister and what it will mean for his future in Downing Street has overshadowed the scrutiny that I also think needs to be put on Andrew and on the rest of the royal family. Because as part of the latest tranche of Epstein files, we haven't just learnt more about Peter Mandelson's relationship with Jeffrey Epstein. We've also learnt a lot more about former Prince Andrew's relationship with that convicted sex offender. The week started, didn't it, with a new photo release showing Andrew leering and kneeling over a woman who appears to be, and we don't know the context, and he's denied all wrongdoing, but appears to be unconscious. Then we had a number of email exchanges released, which showed just the depth of that relationship and the strength of the bond between the two men. We had, for example, emails suggesting that Andrew Mountbatten Windsor and his police protection team were given a secret security code so they could come and go from Jeffrey Epstein's New York home when they visited the city in December 2010. We had other emails showing arrangements being made for Andrew Mountbatten Windsor to stay with Jeffrey Epstein, who had just finished, key detail, just finished serving a prison sentence for sexual crimes less than 5 months earlier. And then we had, didn't we, the seeming confirmation from Ghislaine Maxwell, the closest associate of former Prince Andrew, that the photo of Andrew with his arm around Virginia Giuffre, the woman who accuses him of abusing her, allegations that he denies, is real. This is the same woman, Virginia Giuffre, that Andrew says he has no recollection of meeting. It's the same photo that Andrew has previously suggested was fake. Not fake, not true, it seems, according to Epstein's closest associate. And as his ignominy continues, Andrew has finally moved out of the grounds, finally in Windsor Palace, finally moves out of Royal Lodge, where he's been living for many years. And I have to remind you, this is 11 years after the allegations against him were first made and came to light. And if the treatment of Peter Mandelson and how he was rehabilitated is a case study in how the British establishment protects its own, ignores victims and survivors, and refuses to actually hold accountable people accused of behaving in the most appalling ways, then my goodness, the same has to be said of Andrew, doesn't it? And yet, barely a mention in the context of the latest Epstein files. This being a man still who benefited from huge sums of taxpayers' money, who was given a government job and jetted around the world at our not insignificant expense, including on some of those trips, allegedly hanging out with people that he is said to have referred to as inappropriate friends. His family still receives £132 million a year in taxpayers' money. And I have to be quite honest with you, for me at least, the handling of the allegations against Andrew, for years and still to the day, absolutely reek of cover-up. They took years to take them seriously. They paid for one of his accusers to be paid off in court. They refused to comment on a whole series of revelations. They let him continue to live on royal properties at a peppercorn rent. He remained a duke. He remained a royal highness for year after year after year after the allegations were made. And he is still, even now, despite it all, eighth in line to the throne. And even now, in response to the latest allegations, what does Buckingham Palace have to say about it? What does the king have to say about the alleged conduct of his brother? Nothing. Not a word. No comment. Can that really go on when this is the king's brother and a man who for most of his life was a senior member of the royal family? Because I don't think this head-in-the-sand approach cuts it. I don't think this, well, we have nothing further to add, is good enough. I don't think the vague statements like we had again from Prince Edward this week about focusing on the victims seems sincere when the king of this country is still refusing to publicly say that his brother should go to Congress and give evidence about what he knew about Epstein and his activities. So I think it reflects pretty poorly on the royal family. And I think it's doing quite a lot of damage to them, particularly amongst younger generations, because, you know, these are people who are supposed to embody values that we should all aspire to. They are supposed to be the best of us. And I don't think the handling of the whole Andrew scandal comes close to that, does it? Tell me what you think. How much damage do you think the row over former Prince Andrew is doing to the monarchy? How do you feel about how they've handled it? Has it changed your opinion of the royal family? And could this maybe, just maybe, be the beginning of the end of Britain's monarchy? Or do you think that's overstating it, exaggerating it, perhaps? Give me a call this evening. We'd love to hear your thoughts on the damage that you think is being done or not done. Maybe you think it's unfair to blame the king for this. 0345 6060 973 is the number, as always, for your thoughts on the calls and the WhatsApps. It's 84850 for the text. And you can also say, Alexa, send a comment to LBC. Talk to a royal editor of the Daily Mirror in just a moment. First, though, let's talk to Shivani Sharma, LBC's reporter, who was in Dedham today, where the King and Queen were heckled over the Andrew saga, in the latest sign, I think, that this is becoming a bigger and bigger problem for them. Shivani, very good evening to you. What happened?
Good evening, Ben. Well, I think nothing further to add is a very apt statement that you've made there coming from the royals today. But the awkwardness for King Charles began before he even arrived at his scheduled visit to Dedham, a village in Colchester today. He was going for an event with local charities and a school choir. But before the monarch got there, photographs of Andrew Mountbatten Windsor kneeling on all fours over an unknown woman. The photographs that you mentioned, which have been revealed in the Epstein files, which have been plastered all over the newspapers, were scattered across the high street in Dedham this morning. Now, we understand that they were swiftly picked up and thrown away by locals, most of whom seemed to me to be royalists, before the king actually arrived for this visit. But then a little while later, during King Charles's walk around, he was accosted by a heckler who was quizzing him over his brother and the Epstein scandal.
Charles! Charles! Have you pressurised the police for not investigating Andrew?
Thank you for coming.
If you don't think these people need justice,
then
that's not what we're
saying.
But it is. Because this is the only way to make it clear to people that Andrew will not be let off.
Now, that heckler was quickly escorted away by the police. And as you'd expect, the king was surrounded by officers and royal protection, which somewhat sheltered him from that situation. But you can probably hear there the heckler telling officers after he was escorted away that Andrew can't be let off and that this is the only way to fight for justice for the victims. Now, you won't be surprised to hear, Ben, that the king didn't respond to that heckling. He carried on with his walk around, although worth noting, of course, that a previous royal statement back in October said that their thoughts are with the victims of Jeffrey Epstein, a sentiment which we know was echoed by Prince Edward this week also. But I have to say, despite that entire scandal engulfing Andrew and the royals by association, a lot of the locals I spoke to didn't seem to be put off from braving it in the rain and the cold to line up for hours to pay their respects to the king.
It's an event. We've got to be.
No, I'm very much a royalist, so I'd be here. Whatever, if I had to come by boat, which I think will be close. I did see them a long time ago when my husband was alive at Lavenham. He came to the Guildhall there to open it, and we were very close, so it was wonderful. Yeah.
It's a great honour for them to come down here and to see the community groups that they want to see, so brilliant. And a lot of people have turned out, so thanks for everyone for coming along today.
I have just shaken hands with His Majesty. This glove is never going to be washed again.
Now, as you can hear there, Ben, plenty of support still for the king today. But the Andrew scandal, the Epstein scandal, is clearly not something that he's going to be able to fully escape from.
Shivani, thank you very, very much indeed. Shivani Sharma, LBC's reporter, who was at that event in Dedham in Essex today. Let's talk to Russell Myers about all of this. Russell is royal editor for the Daily Mirror newspaper. Russell, good to have you with us tonight. How damaging do you think this has been and continues to be for the royal family? Evening.
Evening, Ben. Well, I heard your first couple of minutes on the show there, and when you have been covering this story for as long as I have, it ceases to wonder if there's any more to say. But so I thought you said it all. When it's in black and white in front of you, this has been an absolutely indelible stain on the royal family at large, and they haven't dealt with it well. You know, there has been inaction after inaction, and you look at the period of time that has passed of Andrew Mountbatten Windsor being involved in this very, very tawdry scandal, and he has been protected by so many people. And questions will now be asked because, you know, if it was you or I or any Joe public on the street that had information about a case as big and as high profile as this, you can be sure that you would be having police officers knocking at your door. You would have the authorities certainly collaborating with our friends across the pond, and you would be made to give what evidence you did if you had any. So I think that is the big question for the royal family. Why is he still being protected? Why is he not willing to get on a plane and go to the US and give evidence if indeed he does have something to say about Jeffrey Epstein's crimes?
How long can this last, Russell? Do you think this no comment, we have nothing further to add, we won't be responding to the latest revelations, the king still has nothing to say, in public at least, about whether Andrew should go and testify and as you say, explain what he knows? I mean, is that a sustainable position?
Well, you know, it's timing, because certainly the royal family, Buckingham Palace, will consistently say that Andrew Mountbatten Windsor has not been represented by the royal family and the institution for a long time, since he was forced to step back from his role, his public role at least, in 2019 after the BBC Newsnight interview. Then he was on his own. And since then, we've seen the king taking further action, stripping him of his title and his honours. He's exiled now from his sort of luxurious abode in Royal Lodge, who've been now living on the Sandringham estate. But that certainly isn't enough. And I think in the eyes of the public, it's really ramped up. And what surprises me is, you know, every twist and turn of this case, there is more and more to be said. Whenever you think you have scraped the depths of Andrew's association with Jeffrey Epstein, you just have to look at what's happened in the last few days. The pictures of him lying over an unidentified woman, the emails sent, the lies that he and Sarah Ferguson, his ex-wife, has told about their association with Jeffrey Epstein, still conversing with him, you know, essentially begging to be friends with him, taking money from him after he was a convicted sex offender. Yeah. And you know, that is a not only a stain on their characters, but I think it's a really interesting point of how the royal family continues to shy away from
Let me ask you just finally, if I could, about that, Russell, because clearly it's been very damaging for certain senior royals, you know, Andrew, the king himself, I would say. How much do you think it's damaged the institution and people's confidence and belief and trust in the monarchy as a whole?
I don't, you know, that may come as a surprise, because, you know, you look at the polling of members of the royal family, and I think the public in large think that these are isolated incidents. They will question as to why there haven't been more public statements. Of course, we did have that statement finally from the king and queen saying that their thoughts, as always, should be centred on the victims. But you know, Andrew and Sarah Ferguson will remain at the bottom of those polls. But, you know, the king, queen, Prince Princess of Wales seem to be relatively unscarred from it, from the public's point of view.
Right.
You know, let's see how that continues, because there's certainly more calls for action on Andrew's part.
Yeah, and it must be said that none of them have had anything to say in public about any of this either.
Sure.
Thank you very much indeed, Russell. Always good to have you with us. That's Russell Myers, Royal Editor for the Daily Mirror. Right, over to you. Has this changed your view of the king or the monarchy as a whole? How much damage do you think it's done to that institution, or this drip, steady drip of damning allegations against Prince Andrew, who still denies all wrongdoing but hasn't commented for months now on the recent exposés? And do you think this might just prove to be, in hindsight, the beginning of the end of in the monarchy? Because I think a lot of young people in particular are looking at this and thinking, my goodness, these people are supposed to serve the country. They're supposed to embody and epitomise the best of British. And when it comes to this whole sorry saga and this sordid scandal, I think you could argue, couldn't you, pretty strongly, that they failed on both counts. So how much damage is this really doing? 0345 6060 973. Your calls to come on that right after this.
LBC. Shine Night Walk London is a 10K, half marathon or full marathon supported walk around the city at night on the 19th of September to raise vital money for Cancer Research UK. It's also
everyone walking with all their colours, twinkling away.
We can actually see how nice London is. And London is different at night time.
Celebration of life.
And it gives hope.
Step towards a brighter future at shinewalk.org today to get 30% off your entry. Together, we are beating cancer. T's and C's apply.
Most cars are designed for the road. The Mazda CX-30 is designed for you. Our stylish and compact SUV is available with 0% APR when ordered before the 31st of March. Mazda, crafted with Japanese soul. Search Mazda. Available on PCP when financed by Mazda Financial Services by the 30th of June 26. Indemnities may be required. Terms apply. See website.
A Southern train is a place where you can have more me time. A chance to skip traffic and glide to wherever you need to be. With headspace to focus on more important matters. Like if that cloud is a starfish or sunflower. Fast journeys without the rush with great deals at southernrailway.com. Terms apply.
Get your own UK-based account manager, a beekeeper, for support with PensionBee. Because when your pension is in a good place, you're in a good place. When investing, your capital is at risk.
Ben Kentish on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
20 past 10 is the time. Has it changed your view, perhaps, of the royal family or of certain members of it? I mean, it's probably changed your view of Prince Andrew or former Prince Andrew. If you're still as much of a fan as him as you were 10 years ago, then I'd suggest the likeness, probably something a little bit wrong with you. But what about the King? What about Prince William? What about Kate? You know, because as Russell was just saying, to an extent they're protected by this, but they still haven't come out. I mean, what would, you know, what a message it would send if Prince William spoke up tomorrow and said, right, I'm ashamed of my uncle, given everything that's been alleged against him. The best thing he can do for himself, for us, for the country, and for Jeffrey Epstein's victims is get on a first plane across the Atlantic and give evidence to Congress and tell them everything he knows and try and ensure that some of these survivors get some semblance of justice. Imagine if the king or the future king had come out and said that. Instead, we've just got this complete silence. And, you know, some people say silence is complicity. I don't think I'd go that far. But I think it absolutely reeks, the whole handling of this, of a desperate attempt to sweep it all under the carpet. They've only acted at the very last moment when they're forced to. They have nothing to say about their brother, in the king's case, their uncle, in the case of the Prince of Wales. And the serious, serious allegations. I mean, you've pictured this week kneeling over a woman who appears to be unconscious. He denies wrongdoing, but do they not want to know the context of that? Have they not asked? Do they have nothing to say about it publicly? To which the answer to the last question, at least, is no. Not a word. No comment from Buckingham Palace. Previous statements they've put out about sort of vague sort of wishy-washy stuff about, we, you know, must make sure the victims aren't forgotten, but they have been forgotten. And the royal family seems to just want to hope it will all go away. The sticky head in the sand and hope they find something else to talk about approach doesn't cut it for me, I'm afraid. I think they need to do more. I think the head of state of this country needs to show some leadership. And I would respectfully say, and I'm not a Republican, I'm not saying abolish them, but I would respectfully say that throughout this, and I have to, and it hurts me to do it, but I have to include the late Queen in this as well, the handling of this sorry saga reflects appallingly on the royal family. 0345 6060 973 is the number to call. Let's see what you make of it. How much damage do you think it's done to the monarchy? What have you made of the King's handling of it? And has it changed your view and your perceptions of the royal family? Faye's on the line tonight in Southend. Faye, evening.
Hello, Ben. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. Hope you are too, Faye.
Yes, very well, thank you. Do you know, I don't know why I've called in, really, because I wholeheartedly agree with everything you've said in your first introduction and now. Cover-up culture, we can see it in so many different areas. I've been looking into cover-up culture in another area, but this is, like you say, the people who are representing our country across the world doing various things, and for the King and the Queen not to speak up. And I feel quite strongly that William and Kate need to be speaking up as well. You know, if they want the future of the monarchy to continue down to their line and down to their children's line, they need to be doing the right thing now.
What would you like them to say, Faye?
I think they need to be saying that he needs to, just as you've just said, he needs to be going across to America. All of these people that have been mentioned need to be investigated fully. And the victims getting a fair deal of what's actually happened to them and been swept under the carpet for this long. To think it's been 11 years when this first came out, you know, that blew my mind. How long is that? And...
Yes,
you know,
exactly.
We've lost poor Victoria already.
And I've heard people say, yeah. You know, well, he did kick him out of his home and he did strip him of the titles. He did that late last year. These allegations first came to light in 2014. So the argument that the royal, and you know, people say he's only been king for, you know, what is it, 2 years or so.
Yeah.
The idea that anyone in the royal family has reacted decisively or swiftly in response to the allegations against Andrew is, it's factually wrong.
Yeah, completely. Like you said, when you brought the Queen into it, the only thing I could say against the Queen is maybe she was elderly, she was poorly, Charles was taking on a lot more responsibility. But still, you've got the Queen, you've got Charles, and now you've got William, three very senior royals, and they've had opportunity after opportunity to do the right and moral thing, and they haven't.
What do you make of the statement we had this week, a repetition of a previous statement, Faye? This is the statement from Buckingham Palace on Tuesday in response to the latest revelations. This is a matter for Andrew Mountbatten Windsor. The palace does not operate or speak for him in any capacity. As stated in October, their majesties wish to make clear that their thoughts and utmost sympathies have been and will remain with the victims and survivors of any and all forms of abuse. That was all that the palace had to say about the recent allegations.
Is cover-up culture. That is, I wash my hands. I'm not getting any further involved. I've done this and done that. I'm distancing myself from these people. Actually happening in the charismatic church at the moment that I've been watching a lot into as well. And this cover-up culture is so, so dangerous.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because there's that line there, the palace does not speak for him. We're not asking them to speak for him. We're not asking for defence. We're asking what the king thinks. Exactly. We're asking what the king thinks about the allegations about his own brother, who for the vast majority of his life was a senior serving member of the royal family. So the idea that they're being asked to speak for him is ridiculous. I want to know what the king thinks. I want to know if the king thinks he should go and testify. I want to know what the king thought of that photo of his brother.
At what's happened. He would say, I'd like to think the best of my brother, that this isn't true, but this is so serious, this needs investigating. This should have been done 11 years ago. Go clear your name. If you've done not guilty of anything, go get your name cleared. Go sort it out. Get to the bottom of it all.
Do you think it'll get to the point, Faye, where they have to say more than they're saying right now? Or do you think the pressure will continue to grow and once again they'll be forced into it?
I hope so. I'm praying I hope so, because we need to be putting pressure on them, I think, as their citizens, that, you know, we can't, it's not the right way to behave, is it?
No, it's
not. You know, are we a civilised society or not?
And the whole basis of the monarchy, the whole sort of being of it, rests on the idea that they are sort of superior to us and they embody the values that we can only aspire to. And
they should be whiter than white in a way, shouldn't they?
And they,
they're barely cream.
That's a good way to put it, yeah. Heavy shade of grey, perhaps, on this one. That's certainly the position they're taking. Just grey. No clarity. I mean, what do they think of it all? We don't know. Thank you, Faye. Lovely to talk to you this evening. Alison's on the line in Bury St Edmunds tonight. Hi, Alison.
Hi, Ben. Lovely to talk to you
and
again.
And you. Thanks for coming on.
No worries. I don't want a monarchy that stays silent. I'm very much a royalist. I believe in having a monarchy. But I think this is the second time now in 4 or 5 years that this has happened. They stayed silent with Harry and Meghan. You know, the king could have stopped a lot of that and put a statement out and backed his son and gone against the newspapers and what have you. And now they're staying silent about Andrew. So I want to know, I'm like you, I want to know what they think. I want them to be a little bit political. We pay them enough, so surely we, you know, and I'm not against paying them, that's fine. Mm-hmm. You know, I believe in it all.
Yep.
But I want to know what they think. And I think, you know, they have to get off the fence. And, you know, the Queen used to say, you know, never complain, never explain. But it makes them look like they're not bothered. It makes them look like they are hiding something. It makes them look like they are complicit. And, you know,
they needed to have done something before now. Even like you say, even if it's just to say, we don't agree what he's done. You know, he's my brother. I love him, but, you know, and then, there's all the rumours, not rumours, she helped Andrew pay the £12 million for something he
Alison. They haven't been upfront about that. That's another thing. The journalists have asked time and time again, that settlement to Virginia Giuffre, who funded it? And all we know, apparently taxpayers' money wasn't directly involved, but we still have no transparency about and as you say, given our head of state, we fund them to the tune of £132 million a year. I don't think this sort of, well, we're not going to tell you that approach
they need to be a lot more transparent. And I think, there's a lot of stories going around at the minute where, is this the end of the monarchy? Are they losing ground? And they are losing ground because they don't say anything. We can't just have them up there to look pretty. And I love our country. I love all the pomp and ceremony and how it all happens. I mean, I was in the forces myself. I, swore allegiance to Queen and country. So I get it. I understand it. My nephew's in the army. My granddad was, my other granddad. So I get it. I understand it. I want that type of country, but they need to come up to date. There's no longer that time where, say, pre-war or just after the war in the 1920s, where it was just in the papers and it took 3 weeks to get to everybody. Everything is instant now. We live in a 24/7 culture, and it's very evident that they don't say anything. So we need them to say a bit more.
Do you think it's damaging? It's obviously damaged Andrew. I think it's becoming very difficult for the king. Do you think it's undermining people's faith in the actual institution of the monarchy, Alison?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And I think the people who are generally behind it, you only have to look back to Princess Diana and what she said, the men in grey suits. There's two different things. You've got the monarchy and you've got the firm.
Yes.
So, some of the people in the firm, they seem, from what I've heard and read, they seem to be very stuck in the past. They're quite an older generation that, we need to modernise it. And it needs to be brought up to date, because otherwise, I'm afraid to say, maybe not in our lifetime, but it could eventually be the end of the monarchy.
You think this could be the start of
their further down the line.
As much as that saddens you. Alison, I don't want to say that, but I think they're doing themselves no favours at all. As I say, particularly with the younger generations who are looking at this and thinking, what's going on here? Thank you, Alison. Really interesting. Alison and Bury St. Edmunds. Keep your calls coming in on that. Do you think it's unfair to kind of, tarnish the king and other royals, like Prince William, with the actions, or the alleged actions, I should say, of Andrew? Or do you think it's entirely fair to do what Alison and I have done and say, well, we're not saying they're guilty of wrongdoing, but they're not speaking up enough against it and about it and giving us their views on what they really think about it? 0345 606 0973. Next.
I am sorry. Sorry for what was done to you. Sorry that so many people with power failed you. Sorry for having believed Mandelson's lies and appointed him.
Keir Starmer issues a fulsome apology for taking Peter Mandelson's claims about Jeffrey Epstein at face value when he made him our ambassador to the US. Will that be enough, though, to keep the Prime Minister in his job? Talk more about that right after the news headlines with Darrell Jackson.
The Conservative leaders told LBC the Prime Minister or his Chief of Staff should lose their job over Peter Mandelson's appointment. Sir Keir Starmer's apologised for falling for Mandelson's claims about his friendship with Jeffrey Epstein before he was made US Ambassador. A 15-year-old boy has been arrested on suspicion of attempted murder after a teacher was attacked at a school in Pembrokeshire. Milford Haven Comprehensive was put in lockdown for a while earlier. And Ukraine and Russia have agreed to swap prisoners and civilians following trilateral talks with the US in Abu Dhabi. More discussions on ending the war will take place in the coming weeks. LBC weather. Cloud in the north tomorrow with rain turning to snow on hills in eastern areas. Drier with some sunny outbreaks in the west. Cloudy with showers further south. A high of 11 degrees.
LBC. Coming up on Nick Ferrari at Breakfast.
Tomorrow morning with Nick Ferrari at Breakfast. Sir Keir Starmer accuses the security services of failing to vet Lord Mandelson properly. But what do you make of our Prime Minister's attempt to pass the buck? Nick will take your calls on that. Plus, the refurbishment of the Houses of Parliament could cost £40 billion and take 61 years. How can it be justified? Tory MP and former leader of the House of Commons, Sir Jacob Rees-Mogg, will join Nick to weigh in. All that and much more coming up with Nick Ferrari at Breakfast tomorrow morning, 7 o'clock, here on LBC.
Nick Ferrari at Breakfast. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app. LBC.
Octopus Energy. Great value and outstanding customer service. Recommended by Which? 8 years running. Octopus Energy.
People ask me, what's my good place? Wild swimming with the girls on a chilly spring morning. And knowing that with PensionBee, I can choose to invest in line with my values, which is why I picked their climate plan.
Last one in by blood!
At PensionBee, we believe that when your pension is in a good place, you're in a good place. Download the app or go to pensionbee.com and be pension confident when investing your capital is at risk.
Calling all young creatives. It's time to get prep for the media business. And where better than Global Academy? Here's Atina, a media business student in year 12.
Being a young creative at Global Academy means that I get to turn my passion into a career. From studying creative enterprise, I've already learnt how to market my own business and gain knowledge about the business side of the industry.
Global Academy. Apply now and join us in years 10 or 12. GlobalAcademy.com.
A Thameslink train is a place where you can have more me time. A chance to recharge yourself and your phone. To stretch out, sit back, and when you hear All Change Please, you'll know you already have. Go with your flow with great deals at thameslinkrailway.com. Terms apply.
You know that guy I've been seeing?
Yeah.
Turns out my sister's been seeing him too.
Oh, really?
And I heard he's been seeing Kelly at number 56. And Dave.
Your brother?
Yep.
Specsavers opticians and audiologists own and run their stores, so your care is their business, which can make them rather popular.
I've got something to tell you. I've got half an hour with him this afternoon.
Specsavers, your care is our business. Book an appointment today.
This is LBC with Ben Kentish. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
10:36, back to your thoughts on Prince Andrew in just a moment. How much damage do you think the ongoing allegations against him and the fresh revelations pretty much every day are? How much damage are they doing to the monarchy as a whole? And have they changed your perception of the king and other senior members of the family? Or do you think this is unfair? That yes, what Andrew is accused of doing and denies doing is appalling and disturbing and disgusting and despicable, but it's unfair to implicate them all in it. Is that your view, maybe? 0345 6060 973. First, though, let's turn to the other person who is struggling to keep his job as a result of the Epstein files. Sir Keir Starmer apologising pretty profusely today to the victims of Jeffrey Epstein over his decision to appoint Peter Mandelson. And I have to be clear here, at a point when it was known, despite the sort of claims we've heard, that Mandelson had maintained a relationship with Epstein after Epstein's crimes, or some of them, were known. Is this going to cost the Prime Minister his job? Is this apology going to be enough to appease his critics? Luke Francis joins me, associate partner at Pagefield and a former chief of staff and political advisor to the Culture Secretary, Lisa Nandy. Luke, very good evening to you. How much of a pickle is the Prime Minister in tonight?
I think it's a really difficult situation. Now, I've been fortunate to come on several times to speak with you and colleagues over the last 20 months or so, Ben, and this was the first time that when your producers got in touch, I genuinely thought about politely declining because I didn't feel able to come on and defend the government. Well, thank you for having me on. But I listened to the Prime Minister today, and I think the apology missed the mark. I think he apologised for believing Mandelson's lies. But what was missing in that apology was a direct apology for a failure in judgment for even considering him for that role. And the reality is, I don't think this was a case of number 10 having the wool pulled over their eyes. Mandelson has been a problematic figure for a long time. Let's not forget he's been forced to resign not once, but twice from previous governments. And his relationship with Jeffrey Epstein was well documented. So number 10, for good or bad, went into this knowing largely what they were getting. They knew that that relationship had continued after Jeffrey Epstein had been charged. And they took a gamble. It's publicly stated that number 10 saw this as a trade-off. They knew it was a risk, but they thought it was a calculated one. And I think it's backfired enormously.
Why do you think they took the gamble? As you say, clearly there were obvious risks with giving Mandelson that job. Why do you think they concluded that the upsides made it worthwhile?
So I think that the decision was taken that Mandelson's business ties, his political network that spanned several decades and was transatlantic, made him an appropriate candidate to take on that US ambassadorial role. But let's be absolutely clear, that man should never have been anywhere near public office. He has been problematic for an awfully long time, and it has been in the public domain for an awfully long time. This is a catastrophic failure of judgment, and it does genuinely pain me to say this. I've spent almost two decades trying to get a Labour government, and it is so disappointing to see problems like these entirely of our own making. But ultimately, it comes down to a complete failure in judgment at the very top.
Do you think Keir Starmer can survive this as Prime Minister?
I think the question has shifted now from competence and capability through to judgment and trust. And I think that trust has been severed, not just with the public now, but we're seeing this evening with his own MPs. We haven't seen members of parliament on the Labour backbenches breaking ranks like this since the election. People are out publicly calling for resignation and for change. And you only need to look at some of those statements that are coming out from the PLP this evening. People are understandably and rightly furious because this is a problem entirely of the government's own making. I do believe that the elections that are coming up are going to be a watershed moment. We've got the Gorton by-election, which has been its own psychodrama at the end of February. And then we've got local elections in May. And I think were Labour to lose that by-election in Gorton, which, let's be real, is a real possibility. And if those local elections are as bad as current polling suggests, it's hard to see how the Prime Minister can continue.
So come May, we could be in the midst of a Labour leadership contest, potentially.
I think there is a real prospect of that, and I think it's the last thing that we need as a country. It's the last thing that the British public want is more internal fighting and introspection and navel-gazing. We've had that for so long under the Tories. Labour promised something different. They promised stability. They promised consistency. And this is letting the British public down. So the last thing we need to see is a leadership contest.
By your own admission, we have a Prime Minister who has exercised, and I'd say it's not the first time, catastrophic judgment. And if there is any characteristic, you know, you can have prime ministers who aren't very good communicators, who maybe aren't particularly charismatic. But the job of the prime minister, as I see it, the most important aspect of and quality in any prime minister is getting the big calls right and making those judgments in a way that serves the country. And if what you're saying is true, that, you know, the prime minister in this case exercised appalling judgment, then he's simply not the right man for the job. But you can't have a prime minister in post who has poor judgment. It's dangerous.
And I think the British public probably at large agree with you, Ben. I think they are looking on. They'll have seen the Prime Minister today make his apology. I think, as I said, what was missing there was a direct apology about the failure in judgment. And I would be absolutely amazed if this wasn't reflected in the polls over the coming days as people start to feel completely disillusioned with this government. People voted for hope. They voted for change. They voted for that consistency that Labour promised. And it's been anything but, to be frank.
I mean, I'm interested in your thoughts on this, Luke, but everything that I know, I've met Keir Starmer. I think he's a decent, I actually think he's a fairly sort of, you know, moral upstanding man. I suspect, no evidence for this, but I suspect that he would have had quite a lot of hesitation and qualms about appointing Peter Mandelson to that job, but would have been talked into it by the people around him. Now, I'm not saying that's an excuse, the buck stops with the Prime Minister, but from what you know of how this government and how this Downing Street operates, do you think that's probably right, that Keir Starmer took the advice of advisers, that he really actually perhaps should have trusted his own instincts a bit more?
So, and I would caveat everything I'm saying, but I genuinely think Keir Starmer is a decent guy. I think he is in politics for the right reasons. Yep. But politics has a way of creating these situations, of doing this to people. And, you know, there has been some focus on the vetting process, and this story has evolved so quickly that has become a bit of a sideshow. But if the way to circumvent the highest level of security in the government is to lie, then we have a really serious problem. Mm. And there's one of two situations. Either number 10 was aware of the continued relationship and chose to ignore it, or they weren't, and we had a catastrophic failure of process at the heart of government. Both of those options are really bad. But as you said, Ben, rightly or wrongly, the buck stops at the top. And I am sure that Keir Starmer had reservations and concerns about Peter Mandelson. He will have been aware, as we all were, of what was in the public domain. But the real question is why, with those concerns and with those uncertainties, was he still appointed to our most important diplomatic role?
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it? The one that might cost the Prime Minister his job. Thank you, Luke. Luke Francis, Associate Partner, Pagefield, and former Chief of Staff and Political Advisor to Lisa Nandy, who is the Culture Secretary. Interesting. Leadership contest by May, Luke thinks. You know what? If you'd said to me at the start of this week that Keir Starmer still be Prime Minister this time next year, I would have had no hesitation in saying yes. That I think the lack of an obvious successor makes it more likely than not. That I don't think he'll lead Labour into the next election. But I did think... did being the key word. At the start of this week, he would lead them for at least the next year or two. I don't think that anymore. I think it is very, very unlikely that Keir Starmer will be our Prime Minister this time next year. I think it's increasingly unlikely he'll be our Prime Minister this time in 6 months. And what's quite incredible is almost every step of the down the road to downfall was one that he chose to make. That it's a completely and utterly self-inflicted decline. Not because, I agree with Luke, I don't think Keir Starmer's a bad man. I think we've had far more immoral and unethical prime ministers in recent years than him. I think his judgment when it comes to politics has been found sorely lacking time and time again. And this is a really, really kind of prime example, this whole Mandelson row, of the problem with Keir Starmer as prime minister and the team around him. He takes bad advice from people. And he can't see that it's his bad advice because he doesn't really understand politics or have the courage of his own convictions. If he did, I don't think he would have appointed Peter Mandelson, because Peter Mandelson embodies and epitomises everything that Keir Starmer says he hates. And I believe him about Westminster politics. But you can't have a prime minister who doesn't trust his own judgment, as instead forced to rely on other people to tell him what to do, even when those people, as in this case, are so clearly and so obviously wrong. So I think it's a matter of weeks or months now for Keir Starmer, as I see it. Let me know what you make of it. Should the Prime Minister resign over this? Should he go now? Or do you think that apology today, which I think was genuine, by the way, should be enough to buy him some time? Or maybe give him it's not a second chance, is it? What is it, a ninth, tenth, 13th chance? 03456060973. More of your calls to come as well on Prince Andrew, former Prince Andrew, I must say, and whether you think that is damaging the monarchy potentially beyond repair. And we'll have a look at tomorrow's newspaper front pages. Ben Kentish here, 10:46.
LBC, this morning, on Nick Ferrari at Breakfast.
Steve Reid, who's Secretary of State for Housing, Communities and Local Government, and joins me now. What are we to make of a Prime Minister who decided to appoint Peter Mandelson to the role in Washington, knowing he'd maintained links with Jeffrey Epstein after he was convicted of sex crimes?
Well, the PM was lied to, like all of us, by Peter Mandelson. He deceived the media.
The Prime Minister knew that Lord Mandelson had maintained a friendship with Epstein after his conviction. Sir Keir Starmer has become a modern-day John Major, hasn't he? He's in office, but he's not in power.
Nick Ferrari at Breakfast. Back tomorrow morning from 7. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
When you switch the family's unlimited plans to Vodafone, you save. So while Nan's learning to voice note,
can you hear this? Is this on?
You're saving. While your daughter's setting a new high score on her favourite game.
Get in!
You're saving while your son's video calling his crush for 3 hours.
I love you more.
You're saving. Save more when you switch your family's plans to Vodafone with Vodafone Together. Eligible plans from the 30th of October. Credit check and terms apply.
Idle money chills in your current account, parked in front of the telly, wanting a snack, yet too lazy to move. But thanks to Monzo, busy money got up early, automatically split your paycheck into pots, rounded up your purchases into savings, invested your interest into ISAs. Oh, and has already written itself a to-do list for tomorrow. Monzo, the bank that gets your money moving. UK residents aged 18 plus, Monzo personal account required, capital at risk, T's and C's and fees may apply.
Come on, quick, we have to run.
Wait, what? Run to where?
The mini sale event. Keep up.
What? Huh?
The mini sale event. Savings across the range, even on the iconic Mini Cooper.
Whoa!
And that's on top of all existing offers.
Right, let's pick up the pace.
The mini sale event. Amazing offers to act fast on. 5th to the 9th of February at your local mini retailer.
Applicable on new mini orders placed during the sale event and registered by the 30th of June 2026. Visit mini.co.uk/sale event.
Hiya, Kenny the Hamster here, proud pet of Doug and Carol.
Hey up. Looks like my mum Carol's off out with the girls again. I tell you, since she took that quick NHS Healthy Choices quiz, she's drinking less, but going out more. And to think, she thought being healthy would mean being boring. You might want to give it a go yourself. Go, girlfriend!
Take your first little step to healthy. Search NHS Healthy Choices quiz to get a score and a simple plan to follow.
You want £1 million.
I'd love £1 million.
So you enter the birthday draw and you think of a way to spend £1 million.
I'd deposit regularly into a retirement fund that safely tracks the market.
It's a lucky day and you win the birthday draw.
I can't believe it!
And you buy a snake and a superbike instead.
Yeah, baby!
Is it your lucky day? For your chance to win £1 million, just search the birthday draw and enter now. From Global and ITV. 18 plus UK only. No purchase necessary.
Leading Britain's conversation. LBC with Ben Kentish.
It's 10:49. Ruth, I come to your call on the royal family and how they've handled the Andrew allegations. In just a moment, let's just quickly see what's leading tomorrow's newspaper front pages. Another difficult set of headlines for Keir Starmer, the Prime Minister. The Times, for example, Prime Minister labelled gullible and weak over Mandelson. Keir Starmer looks weak, naive and gullible after apologising for accepting Peter Mandelson's claim. That, according to Baroness Harriet Harman, a former deputy Labour leader. The Mirror leads on the same story. Keir Starmer's survival battle. Keir and present danger. Keir Starmer left fighting for his political career at the Mirror front page over Peter Mandelson's relationship with paedophile Jeffrey Epstein. Angela Rayner leads the Daily Mail, reportedly saying, "I'm ready to go." This is the former Deputy Prime Minister telling friends she's ready to launch a leadership campaign as Labour MPs warn Keir Starmer that his premiership hangs by a thread. Ms Rayner apparently telling one MP after the key vote on Wednesday that she would be ready if there is a leadership contest. The Guardian front page, Starmer in appeal to Labour MPs as pressure grows for a number 10 reset. And how many times can you have a reset? Downing Street's defied calls, removal of Keir Starmer's top aide Morgan McSweeney, as frustration grows over a wait for documents about Peter Mandelson that some fear could last for weeks. The I newspaper, Labour's women in grey suits may be sent to number 10 to tell the Prime Minister to resign. Not sure the women in grey suits are. Perhaps Lucy Powell, the deputy leader, Rachel Reeves may be the Chancellor. And last but not least, the Daily Telegraph, also returning to Angela Rayner. Rayner tilt at number 10, hit by tax inquiry. This is the news that Angela Rayner could have her hopes of becoming Prime Minister scuppered as she has to wait for an HMRC investigation into her tax affairs. Keep your thoughts coming in on how much damage you think's been done to Keir Starmer by this and whether you personally would like to see the Prime Minister resign over his handling of the Peter Mandelson affair. But for now, your thoughts on Prince Andrew, I keep saying that, don't I? Former Prince Andrew, Andrew Mountbatten Windsor, and whether you think the royal family's attempts to make this problem go away have done them more harm than good, and perhaps damage it will take them a long time, if ever, to repair. Ruth's called from Bedford this evening to talk about exactly that. Ruth, what do you think? Evening.
Can I just comment on the on Starmer's apology today?
Yes,
well,
sure.
Well, when he's saving his own skin, he'll make an apology. That's what about the rape gang inquiry? When's that going to be set up to protect people in this country?
Well, they finally found someone to chair it, Ruth, I think, haven't they, after weeks of trying? Let's hope it doesn't drag on too long, because the survivors of that need justice.
For the victims of that, has he? Well, you know, well, it just winds me up.
Yeah, go on. Tell me about how much damage do you think has been done to the royals as a result of all of this?
Well, I think if the media keep on, it's going to do some damage, but I don't see why it should. Poor, I feel so sorry for Charles. He's between a rock and a hard place. I think he's made it perfectly clear that he's doing all he can to do what he can. But what can he do? Does he have to bundle him onto a plane, you know, knock him out and go, you know what Andrew's like, he's so stubborn.
Well, do you know what I'd like him to do, Ruth? Let me know what you make. Obviously, the king can't force him to go and testify. I think the palace should put out a statement, very short, to the point, that simply says the king hopes his brother will do the right thing and will be encouraging him, both in private and in public, to go and testify in order to help the victims of Jeffrey Epstein get the justice they so deserve. That's all that they need to say.
Yes, I agree with you. That'd be fine.
So why won't they say that?
Well, I don't know. Perhaps they're being advised by the same people who advised Starmer.
Morgan McSweeney. It's got a hotline to King Charles. Do you know what, Ruth? Both of them are being badly advised, it seems to me. But ultimately, they're the Prime Minister and they're the King. And they are supposedly the leaders of this country and the buck stops with them.
Yeah, but you know the King has no say.
He's the King.
Yes, but he hasn't got any powers, has he?
If the king wants to say something, if he wants to put out a statement about his own brother, nobody could stop him. He's the king.
Yes, but then he's advised what to do, isn't he?
But then he's being badly advised. Ultimately,
exactly.
It's his decision.
My point exactly. And I think poor old he's got cancer. He's had so much to deal with Harry, and you know it's not his fault what his brother's been doing.
Of course it's not, or allegedly doing, but it is his fault how he's chosen to respond to it, or at least we can hold him responsible.
Well, you don't know the thing is, you don't know how he's responding to it. That's your point.
I know how he's responding to it in public, and I'm not impressed, to be quite honest.
Well, yeah, but in private as well. I mean, he's not allowing him to join in any of the family things. I mean, I think that's not justice, is it?
Imagine saying to the victims of Jeffrey Epstein, the ones that have accused Andrew, well, he won't be going to Sandringham for church this Christmas. That's not justice. And it's not transparency. And I want to see more transparency from the royal family. And I want to see them start, they talk about putting the victims first of Jeffrey Epstein. I'd like to see a bit more action on that. I'd like to see a public statement saying that Andrew should go and testify to Congress. And Ruth, we agree on that. I don't think it's likely to happen, but I think it should. Thank you for the call, Ruth. Lovely to talk to you tonight. To Chandra in Liverpool. Evening, Chandra.
Not in Liverpool, Ben. I'm in Newcastle.
I don't know why I said Liverpool, Chandra. You're in Liverpool. You're in Newcastle. Forgive me.
I wish I was in Liverpool. It's a beautiful city.
So is Newcastle, but, sir.
Yes, indeed. If my photograph is on the currency notes of this country, then I have to conduct myself in a much higher moral and ethical order than everyone else among my subjects. And if I'm the leader of the country, and if I've built my career saying, I'm the defender of the vulnerable, and I'm a public prosecutor, and I've built my career defending the vulnerable, I ought to behave very differently. Both King Charles and Sir Keir Starmer have fundamentally failed to uphold their moral duty. Because I'm not accusing either of them of inappropriate conduct,
but
absolutely I'm accusing them of failing morally. Because Keir Starmer, he's supposed to have built his career, and his way into politics has been under the claim that he is the one who stands for the vulnerable.
That he'll clean it, and that he'll clean politics up. Chandra, it just strikes me there's an interesting kind of contrast there, because, I mean, what you describe as Keir Starmer's moral failure on this could well, and I think probably will, cost him his job as Prime Minister. What were the consequences for the King's moral failure, as you see it?
He should at least have the decency to acknowledge that the institution of the royal family, the firm, has failed. Mm. I mean, it doesn't necessarily mean that their role no longer exists in the British society.
Yes.
They don't have to lose their credibility in terms of the pecking order, but they've certainly failed.
They've failed to lead by example. I think that's hard to disagree with. Thank you, Chandra. I want to squeeze in Faraz in Denham, where the King was today, actually, just before we move on. Faraz, were you there shaking his hand?
You know, Ben, different Denham.
Different Denham.
Try.
Would you have been there if he was in your Denham?
Do you know, I am a royalist, so let's say that from, mm-hmm. from the outset. But your point about how the royal family handled this, and I guess for me, you know, particularly as being a fan of William and Kate, this was a real chance, and still is a real chance, for them to define themselves and their future role as king and queen of this country by just saying what they really feel. The nation will support them and actually resonate if they could be freed from convention and actually be able to just say it as it is.
What would you like
that
them to say
them
for us?
Huge respect. Well, I think we know. We know the lurid behaviour. We can see it from the evidence and the photo.
Oh, Faraz, they've got to you, I'm afraid. They've got to Faraz. We'll have to leave that one there. Thank you very much indeed, though, Faraz. A lot of people getting in touch to say... I'm not a Republican. A lot of real royalists getting in touch to say, look, for their own good, for the, you know, the future of trust and faith and confidence in the monarchy, something needs to be done about this beyond what the royal family is currently doing about Andrew, who, again, I must say, denies all the wrongdoing. Right, we're going to move on. The other side of the news at 11. I want your thoughts on the revelation today that Alton Towers theme park will tell people with conditions like ADHD and anxiety that they can no longer use the disabled people's queue. Is that the right decision? Is there no reason for people with those conditions to get a queue jump? Or are those conditions just as disabling as any other?
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 11 o'clock, anger's growing among Labour MPs this evening with calls for the Prime Minister's Chief of Staff to leave Number 10 and warnings that Sir Starmer's own future is under threat over Peter Mandelson's appointment. The Prime Minister's apologised for falling for Mandelson's claims about his friendship with convicted paedophile Jeffrey Epstein before he was made US ambassador. Luke Francis, former Labour political adviser, told LBC that apology missed the mark.
What was missing in that apology was a direct apology for a failure in judgment for even considering him for that role. The reality is I don't think this was a case of Number 10 having the wool pulled over their eyes. Mandelson has been a problematic figure for a long time. His relationship with Jeffrey Epstein was well documented. So Number 10, for good or bad, went into this knowing largely what they were getting.
Peter Mandelson's denied any wrongdoing. A teacher who was attacked at a school in southwest Wales earlier has been discharged from hospital. A 15-year-old boy has been arrested on suspicion of attempted murder over the assault. It happened this afternoon at Milford Haven Comprehensive School in Pembrokeshire. An inquiry has found the deaths of at least 30 people who died while attempting to cross the English Channel could have been prevented. Their inflatable vessel overturned in November 2021 during one of the deadliest small boat crossings on record. Only two people survived. Issa Mohammed Omar was one of them.
Everyone fell into the sea. It's very painful when someone is dying inside the water. If a rescue would come quickly, I believe half of those people would be still alive today. We feel like we were like treated like animals.
Well, ministers say nearly 60,000 illegal migrants and convicted criminals have been removed or deported since the 2024 election. More than 15,000 were deported in that time, a 45% increase on the 19 months before. 43,000 people left voluntarily after being told they were in the UK illegally. Ukraine and Russia have agreed to swap prisoners and civilians following trilateral talks with the US in Abu Dhabi. More discussions on ending the war will take place in the coming weeks. And interest rates have been held at 3.75% following the first rise in inflation in 5 months. But the Bank of England's signalled that cuts could come later this year as inflation begins to fall. LBC weather. Cloudy in the north tomorrow with rain turning to snow on hills in eastern areas. Drier with some sunny breaks to the west. Cloudy with showers further south, a high of 11 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Daryl Jackson.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Ben Kentish.
It is 11:03. You're listening to Ben Kentish here on LBC. And we're going to talk about a story between now and midnight that I'm a bit in two minds about, if I'm totally honest with you. Perhaps you can help me get to the bottom of what I think about it. And I want to know what you think about it, as always. It's the news today that Alton Towers theme park is going to stop allowing some people with conditions like autism, ADHD and anxiety
to use the disability queuing system this February half term. Merlin Entertainments, which runs Alton Towers, says the number of people who are requesting a queue jump, effectively, because of a disability has been increasing, and that the current system simply isn't working anymore because queue times for disabled guests have increased as a result. Now, part of me thinks, well, yeah, as depressing and as difficult and debilitating as conditions like anxiety and ADHD can be, do you really need to jump a queue for a theme park ride as a result of them? Particularly if, and this is where I've got quite a lot of sympathy with Alton Towers, particularly if that means people with real serious physical disabilities who can't stand for long and can't queue for a long time are having to wait longer to get on those rides, even in the disabled queue, because it's now so busy. So I think I'm behind this decision. I think it makes sense. But I can also see why there would be a case that if you've got autism, the idea of standing in a crowded queue for a very, very long time could be very difficult. Same if you've got anxiety. ADHD, slightly less so. Might be quite difficult for you to just stand there waiting patiently, but is it impossible? I don't think it is. So I think this is probably the right decision, but it is a little bit risky. It is a little bit risky, I think, because of the precedent it sets, because there are other ways, unrelated to standing in a queue for a theme park ride, where I think conditions like anxiety, autism, and ADHD can be incredibly debilitating and disabling. And I don't want us to get to a point where we basically say that invisible disabilities like those, which are classed as disabilities under the Equality Act in most cases, aren't real disabilities. It's a tricky one. I think it's probably the right decision, but I wouldn't want it to sort of come at the expense of people with those conditions being treated as if they don't have disabilities, because they do. And they can be very, as I say, very, very disabling disabilities. What do you think? Is Alton Towers banning people with ADHD and anxiety and autism from using the disability queues the right decision or not? They're trialling this in the February half term, obviously a busy time for the theme park, and they will see how it goes before deciding whether or not to make that the policy more generally. Is it the right decision? 03456060973. The chief executive of ADHD UK today says that a group of people will be excluded because of this lack of accommodation. Nobody likes queuing, he says, but when a child has ADHD, their energy and focus makes it almost impossible. As an adult with ADHD, I can tell you, he continues, there's a whole lot of stuff I haven't done because I can't face the queuing. So if he's right, and this will deter people with those conditions to going to the theme park and going to Alton Towers because they don't feel it, that they simply can, then that's a sad state of affairs as well. So is this the right decision? And if not, what should they be doing instead? Call me this evening with your thoughts on that. 03456060973. Should people with hidden disabilities, like the ones I just mentioned, be able to jump queues and use the queues that are used for disabled people? Leah Maskell joins me, author of ADHD and A to Z, who is an ADHD coach and director of ADH Works as well. Leanne, lovely to have you with us tonight. Is this the right decision in your view?
No, because it breaks the law. And the reason that it breaks the law is not because they're saying, oh, this group of people shouldn't be able to skip the queue, essentially. It's because each person with a disability is unique. So the adjustments should be tailored to that individual. And that's the problem with what Alton Towers is doing, is they're giving a blanket rule and they're making an assumption about multiple groups of people by their labels, including the people that they've said have, you know, additional accessibility needs, and they're making an assumption that they, you know, if they let them skip the queue, let's say, that that will help remove the substantial disadvantage that they experience, but it's also making an assumption about them. And ultimately, that's where they're going wrong. So I think that nobody enjoys queuing up for 3 hours for a 30-second ride. And I think that is really the point that we need to be looking at, which is clearly the system is broken. And so my question is, why wouldn't Alton Towers just make that virtual queuing available for everybody and then look at what is going wrong for people that maybe have got physical disabilities that they can't you know, literally get to the rides at that point. But if you look at it from that way, it's a really obvious question.
But what they say they're doing is reserving the disability pass for guests who, as they put it, have difficulty standing, need level access, or have urgent toilet needs, which, you know, I think a lot of people would say should definitely get priority for the disabled queue, Leanne. Do people with anxiety and autism really need that sort of preferential treatment in the same way?
Well, I think it's not preferential treatment. And that's kind of the point here from a legal perspective, is that it's not preferential treatment.
Maybe that's the wrong word, but the allowance then, the reasonable adjustment in the same way as somebody who can't stand, for example.
And that's the reason for that is that it's going to depend on the individual. So when I went to Disneyland Paris a couple of years ago, I actually did a lot of work for Disneyland around ADHD, Disney. And so when I went there, I thought, oh, well, as they've literally brought me here, I should tell them about ADHD and see what happens. And they immediately actually, they said to me, give us your diagnosis. So I gave my diagnosis. And then they said, here's a card. And that enabled me to use these virtual queues. And I went into the park with my boyfriend then. And he said, that's not fair. And he was like, you don't need that queue pass. And I was like, yeah, I don't need this queue pass. I was like, that isn't really what I wanted from, like, that. I didn't need that in that moment. So, you know, in that way, they made an assumption about what would help me. And what is ironic, within about 5 minutes of being in the park, someone ran up to us and they tapped me on the shoulder and they said, you dropped this card. And I dropped the queue pass card, like, as soon as I got into it. And so that is the disability aspect that I have more so. And for me, like, the queuing might not be so much of an issue as someone else who, you know, has really, really bad anxiety. For me personally, if I have to queue, I'll usually just leave. So, and that's ultimately what I think Alston Towers needs to take that approach.
Why is that, Leanne, if I could just ask, what is it about the queuing that's so difficult?
For me personally, I think that I'm just like, well, I'd rather just not put myself through this pain of standing here for 3 hours and asking myself how I've got to the point in my life where I need to queue for 3 hours for a 30-second ride, because my brain is constantly going all the time. And that doesn't mean that I'm any more entitled to not queue than anyone else, that we all have got the choice whether we want to put ourselves in those positions or not. And so if Alton Towers made this virtual queuing option available for everyone, which is obvious, everyone would like to be able to do that,
of course,
it would be far more efficient, but they won't be able to sell the fast pass track rides. So it's about money, essentially. So if they made that available for everyone, it would obviously work much better for literally everyone, people with physical and invisible disabilities as well. But the fact is they're not saying that. They're saying, oh, no, we think that people with ADHD, autism, anxiety, etc., are taking away essentially the spaces that are needed for people with physical disabilities. Yeah. But those people with physical disabilities equally, like, might not have as much of a problem. So when you start talking about it as a blanket rule for groups of people, that's where you go wrong, because legally anyway, you can't just blanket discriminate against a whole group of people for exactly
that
reason.
I might be wrong, and I'll double check this, but I think what they're saying is you won't automatically be able to jump the queue just because you've got a condition like anxiety, ADHD or autism. If there is a very clear reason and a very sort of pressing need that you need to jump the queue, then I think they'll factor that in. But as you say, it won't be a kind of blanket queue jump, right? I asked this question, Leanne, as someone who has this diagnosis as well, but do you think most people with ADHD diagnoses see themselves as disabled?
Well, I cut it from a legal point of view. So for me personally, when I first had this diagnosis, I started working in law. And until that point, I could not keep a job, and I couldn't actually even hardly get a job to keep. And they said to me, do you have a disability? And I said, no. I was like, I've got ADHD. I'm just really productive. And I said, okay. And then, but at the same time, I had moved over the road from that job. I had took out an 8-month rental contract because I was so determined not to quit. And that's not a normal thing that people do, to not quit a job. And so it's a very individual. And of course, I can't make that blanket statement on behalf of everyone with ADHD. But from the legal perspective, it is, does this condition that you have, physical or mental, impair your ability to do normal day-to-day activities in the same way as other people would be able to do that? And so if you look at it from that view, the diagnostic criteria for ADHD requires that you have at least two parts of your life which are significantly impacted on a long-term basis. So presumably, yes, it's going to depend what you're talking about, but I can write you a book. But for example, I booked a flight to Australia a month ago, completely out of the blue, and I didn't know I was going to do it, and I've left my flat in London for, and I don't know how, when I'll be back, but it's that kind of impulsivity which you wouldn't necessarily look at and say, oh, that's a disability, you can't stand in the queue.
Yes.
But it's just different for everybody, and that what we need is a bit more of an individual approach to human beings as they are, rather than trying to put them into boxes.
Yes. And that's, as much as I understand why Alton Towers is doing what it's doing, I worry that we are potentially heading back towards a point where people start saying, well, unless a disability is physical and you can see it, then it doesn't really exist. And that's a dangerous place to get to.
We're already at that point. Me talking to you about this on the radio right now is exactly this point. But it's ironic because there's 80% of disabilities are actually non-visible.
Mm.
And so it's making assumptions about people with visible disabilities just as much as not. And the question is, who made Alton Towers in charge of who deserves access to what accommodations? But ultimately, if they made that kind of service available to everyone, then they could treat people as individuals, because the fundamental system wouldn't be broken in the first place. But I think that signifies our whole society. If you look at schools where children have got special needs and that numbers are increasing, why don't they just make it available for everybody, where everyone is treated like human beings and they're able to do whatever it is that they need to do, like fidget in class, without having to be forced to sit there or go outside? Like, I think that basically we should be treating everyone with just the basic respect, and it's the system that is broken, not individuals. But I think what Alton Towers are doing is very clever for advertising, because we're talking about them on the radio now.
We are, but not necessarily in a positive. I'm not sure it's going to prove to be good PR, but I suppose some people say there's no such thing as bad PR. Thank you, Leanne. Really interesting conversation. That's Leanne Maskell, author of ADHD and A to Z, an ADHD coach and director of ADHD Works. What do you think? And I'd really like to hear from people this hour as well, who have the conditions that I mentioned there, anxiety, ADHD, autism, perhaps another hidden disability, about how you feel about being told that if you go to Alton Towers this February half term, you won't be afforded a disabled pass and a disability queue jump simply because of your condition. If you're in a wheelchair, or if you've got a bad back, or you've just had a knee replacement and you're on crutches, then presumably you will. Is that fair? Is that right? Because really, autism, ADHD, anxiety can make queuing just as difficult, I would say, as a lot of physical conditions and a lot of physical disabilities. So is it right that Alton Towers has taken this decision? I still think it probably is on balance, but it's one of the conversations we have together where I'm sort of slightly on the fence on it, and I can see the risks and I can see the kind of problems that Leanne was just describing there. What do you think? 0345 60 60973 is the number you need to call. You can WhatsApp the same number, or if you like, you can text me on 84850. Really interested in your thoughts on this. Is this the right decision? How debilitating and disabling are conditions like ADHD, autism and anxiety? And would they stop you from queuing for a theme park ride if you are somebody who has them? Lots more to come. Take your calls on that right after this.
Weekdays from 7 a.m.
They have fatal incompetence.
Straight to the point.
What is the problem they've got over there?
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
The country's going backwards. Growth down. Energy prices up.
Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app. Download it now from your app store. LBC.
Idle money chills in your current account. Parked in front of the telly. Wanting a snack, yet too lazy to move. But thanks to Monzo, Busy Money got up early, automatically split your paycheck into pots, rounded up your purchases into savings, invested your interest into ISAs, oh, and has already written itself a to-do list for tomorrow. Monzo, the bank that gets your money moving. UK residents aged 18 plus, Monzo personal account required, capital at risk, T's and C's and fees may apply.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics, with over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
Things are really heating up in the country's smallest house.
Dad!
squealed me a mouse.
We could save around £100 by setting the boiler flow temperature to 60 degrees.
And turning radiators down in rooms we don't use,
interrupted Mo.
Yes, Mo.
Turn them down, not off, said Mia.
Plus finding and blocking drafts,
said Mo.
Should save enough to increase our allowance.
A little saves a lot. You could save around £100 a year off your energy bills with three tips at gov.uk/cleanenergy.
Go where umbrellas are for cocktails. There's still time to get up to £300 off city breaks in EasyJet's Big Orange Sale. Or get flights from £28 one way. EasyJet. Get out there. Selected dates and flights. Limited availability. Holiday sale ends 3rd of March. Min spend and ATL protected. T's and C's apply.
Ben Kentish on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Let me come straight to your calls. Is Alton Towers completely justified in telling people with ADHD, autism and anxiety that they won't be able to jump the queue? Maybe jump the queue is a bit of the wrong way of putting it. They won't be able to use the disability queue, the disability pass that Alton Towers has this February half term. They say there's too many people now saying they are disabled, and it means that people with physical disabilities are having to queue for longer than Alton Towers would like. So is that the right decision? Kirk's a new caller in Glasgow to talk about that. Welcome to the programme, Kirk. Evening.
Hello, good evening. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. How about yourself, Kirk?
Well, you know, I'm pretty disappointed in, I think, what I'm hearing about the decision by Alton Towers to go down this road. I think on one hand, you can't have an objective being a commercial business saying that you're going to be caring, inclusive and be making magical moments for everyone when potentially you're going to think about, you know, discriminating against people with recognised, recorded, unseen disabilities and take away the potential magical experience that they might have because queuing, you know, for some people, even with, you know, neurodivergent disabilities can be, you know, as debilitating as it potentially could be for those with physical disabilities. And I don't think that you can easily make a judgment about who deserves preferential treatment over the other. And what drives me quite to a state of anger is that this is a protected characteristic. If someone has a recorded disability, regardless of what that is, you can't discriminate one over the other.
And you work in this area, Kirk, is that right?
So I'm ex-Royal Navy, so ex-military, but I'm still a reservist, and as part of my role, I'm an equality, diversity and inclusion advisor.
Right.
And I now work in further and higher education, where the sensitivity around this issue has become much more apparent. We cannot discriminate in education based on what someone has as their recorded disability. So we have to make a reasonable adjustment for everyone, regardless of what that disability presents.
Do you think it might be illegal, then? Do you think it might breach the Equality Act, this distinction they're making between physical, visible disabilities and hidden disabilities?
100%. If they were to discriminate and say, just because you have an unseen disability, we're going to give someone else who has a physical disability preferential treatment over you, that would be a breach of the Equality Act 2010, because that disability is a protected characteristic.
Interesting.
And that would stand up in court. Absolutely, 100%.
Thank you, Kirk. Lovely to have you with us for the first time. Interesting to get an expert perspective on this as well. Matt's on the line in Colchester. Hi, Matt.
Hi there.
What do you make of it, Matt?
I find it is all a bit, it all getting a bit much these days. I had an adult diagnosis of autism, a proper medical one, and I found it quite enlightening to various aspects of my life. But when it comes to something like going to a theme park, no one likes to queue. I wouldn't dream of, if someone said, you've got this diagnosis, here you go, you can join the short queue, I would feel pretty horrific taking up that space, just as me. Again, my young daughter, when we went to Legoland, she had quite a weak bladder, and we managed the queues without queue jumping, and we took a potty with us, or my wife would take her to the bathroom and come back and rejoin the queue, and we joined in with everyone else. Again, the disabled and the speedy queue I think should be for people who have a real need for it.
I agree. Not I mean, I'm, everyone's going to agree with that. But isn't the point that Leanne and others are making here, including Kurt there, that, that people with a real need for QJump might include people who have conditions like yours? Because hidden disabilities can also impact your ability to stand in a queue for 3 hours. If you suffer from extreme anxiety or autism or ADHD, then actually that could be far more difficult for you than it might be for somebody else. And that is a result of your disability.
It is, but equally, it's a theme park. It's slightly different to an education environment or...
So are you sort of saying, well, if it's that hard for you to queue, don't go to Alton Towers?
Not necessarily that, but just pick your battles. You go there, maybe you don't go on the super busy ride, or you wait till the end of the day when it gets a bit quieter.
I hear what you're saying. I just think we don't want to get to a point where we kind of say to disabled people, well, you know, you might love football, but, you know, it's hard to get a wheelchair on a football stadium, so you just have to watch it on TV. You know, there should be an expectation, I think, that all sorts of venues, whether that's theme parks or sports stadiums, or as you say, Matt, schools or whatever it is, make allowances for people with disabilities that are both physical and mental.
And I think with the football pitch one,
yeah,
that's a great one. If you've got a chair or you're unable to stand, get wheeled to the front. But if you're anxious, you've got ADHD and all that, it doesn't mean you get a free pass to the priority area with a bit more space or a bit close to the pitch or anything like that.
That this doesn't happen in other settings. That, yes, someone with anxiety wouldn't be able to sit in the disabled area of a football stadium.
Exactly, yeah.
Yes.
It's dreadful to say it, because I know it affects people in different ways. And
They might, Matt. I don't know if we're right on that. If you contacted the club and said, you know, I love football, I've got tickets to the game, I've got crippling anxiety, I can't bear being amongst crowds... I suspect they probably would say, OK, let's see what we can do. Maybe you can go in the disabled area, because extreme anxiety is legally a disability, just as the same way as being in a wheelchair is.
It is, but that's all good and well. Write to Alton Towers in advance and get a...
Yeah.
And there'll be an amount of tickets per day for this, and you've just got to be... quick to grab one.
Let me ask you a different question, because there will be people with physical disabilities who are just as able to who are more able to queue than somebody with a hidden disability. If say you've got a disability that relates to your arm or your hand, and in no way affects your ability to stand in a queue, do you think that person should be able to apply for a disability pass? Because there's a lot of physical disability conditions that actually wouldn't affect your ability to queue.
Yeah, to be fair, if you're in a wheelchair, being completely harsh, if you're in a wheelchair, you're in an ideal position to queue for 3 hours because you're not up on your feet.
But what we're saying is it should be done on a case-by-case basis, regardless of what your disability is.
Yes, but not...
Right.
But again, it's also... You've got to weigh up the scenario. You can't just case by case everyone at the gate, because everyone will just say.
And this is it, isn't it? This is why it's tricky, because once theme parks or other kind of companies are getting into a place where they're deciding whether someone's official, legally recognised, medically diagnosed disability they think is valid enough to jump the queue. You're in a tricky place, because they're going to turn around and say, well, yeah, the law says you're disabled and your doctor says you're disabled, but we disagree. Which, as Kurt was saying, is illegal. Matt, really interesting perspective. Lovely to hear from you. Thank you very much indeed for getting in touch. Martha is a first-time caller in Dunbar in Scotland. Hi, Martha. Welcome.
Hi there. Hi. I have severe anxiety. excuse me, sorry.
That's okay.
And I just called in because, yeah, I feel like it's just kind of, you know, separate. Yeah, I think like what you said before, like on a case-by-case basis, it feels like that is a better solution. It's so difficult to describe what severe anxiety is like. I'm in a very anxious state right now because I had a panic attack picking my son up from school, which is not uncommon.
Right.
And the effects of that are such that I hallucinate. I don't know where, you know, I kind of lose bearings. It's not something I can control, and I have like tricks and exercises to try and stop it. But the idea of queuing is just completely, it's not, I wouldn't even go to Alton Towers because it's for me, it's just too, it would be too difficult.
Would you go if you didn't have to queue, Martha?
Possibly. It would remove one barrier.
So that for you, this policy change by Alton Towers might be the difference between you feeling that you could go and have a good time there and you looking at the prospect and saying, absolutely not, I'm not taking that chance.
Yeah, 100%. I grew up in the Midlands, and I grew up really near Alton Towers, and we used to go all the time when I was young. So it's not something I've had all my life. It's come out later in life. So
what would happen if you had to stand in a queue for 3 hours? Would that almost guarantee you'd have a panic attack?
No, it entirely depends. I could be okay. More often than not, I wouldn't be. It just depends on kind of... It's like, if you imagine... fireworks going off all around you, mm-hmm. and how disorientating and triggering that would be, or gunshots. It's like that, but the gunshots are sound voices and the people, you know, bodies and things. So it's not some. It's like a overstimulus kind of thing. So it's it would be pretty impossible. Sorry, I've lost my train of thought.
That's all right. That's absolutely fine, Martha. I've got to say that the more this conversation goes on, and the more I hear from people like yourself, the more I think my instinct, and it was only an instinct, and this story is wrong.
I understand what you're saying.
No, but I think I'm wrong. I think I'm coming round to the view. And I was sort of 60-40 on it at the start, but I'm coming round to the view that this is the wrong decision, because I don't think anybody has the, or should have the ability to say to you that given the extent of your anxiety, if you need to jump a queue to stop yourself having a panic attack, for example, or just to stop yourself feeling completely overwhelmed, I think you should have that right as somebody who does have a disability.
Yeah. No, I understand. And, I don't want to take anything away from... And every, as I say, you know, every case is different. So it's so hard with mental illness because you can't see it, and it's even almost impossible to describe. So... It's just one of those things that's so difficult, and it feels like we take one step forward and then two steps back at the minute in terms of like inclusivity and like helping people cope, if you know what I mean. So that's kind of why I called, just because I felt like after what's happened today, you know, I just felt like I needed to get it across.
And the other thing, and again, perhaps I'm guilty of this too, but the other thing that struck me listening to you, Martha, was how we distinguish, and you know, I've been doing this in the last half hour, so I put my hands up, between physical and mental disabilities as if they are distinct. Whereas for something like anxiety, and you know, I've had times in the past where I felt I had sort of suffered with it, it can be extremely physical as well. And in the way that you will describe it, a panic attack is a physical symptom, right?
Yeah.
It's not just that you feel a bit stressed in your mind. For a lot of people with anxiety, it manifests very, very physically. So it's not just a mental disability.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You know, I can feel like I'm passing out half the time when it's happening.
And some people do, and people have panic attacks, and people throw up, and it's an incredibly physical condition for a lot of people. So this distinction, well, is it a physical disability or is it a mental one? It doesn't really work like that. Thank you, Martha. Lovely to have you with us for the first time. I think I was wrong on this. I think Alton Towers has got it wrong. I cannot in all good conscience say to somebody like Martha that they shouldn't be classified as disabled when it comes to something like their ability to stand in a crowd for a long time. Do you think that's right? Or do you think actually Alton Towers is well within its rights to ban people with ADHD and anxiety from using disability passes for the fast lane? 0345 606 0973. Lots more calls to come on that. Plus, the Home Secretary pledging in the last hour to ramp up the removal and deportation of illegal migrants after it's revealed that nearly 60,000 have been deported since the government took office. We'll have more details on that story just after the news headlines. It's 11:32. Here's Daryl Jackson.
The Prime Minister's apologised to Jeffrey Epstein's victims for falling for Peter Mandelson's lies after appointing him as his ambassador to the US. Sir Keir Starmer says he regrets the decision following allegations Mandelson was passing sensitive information to the late sex offender.
A teacher who was attacked by a pupil at a school in Pembrokeshire has been discharged from hospital. Police say Milford Haven Comprehensive was placed in lockdown this afternoon and a teenager arrested on suspicion of attempted murder. An inquiry has found the deaths of at least 30 people who died while attempting to cross the English Channel could have been prevented. Their inflatable vessel overturned in November 2021 during one of the deadliest small boat crossings on record. LBC weather, cloudy in the north tomorrow with rain turning to snow on the hills in eastern areas. Drier with some sunny breaks to the west, cloudy with showers further south, a high of 11 degrees.
This is LBC.
Shine Night Walk London is a 10k, half marathon or full marathon supported walk around the city at night on the 19th of September to raise vital money for Cancer Research UK. It's also
everyone walking with all their colours, twinkling away.
We can actually see how nice London is. And London is different at night time.
Celebration of life, and it gives hope.
Step towards a brighter future at shinewalk.org today to get 30% off your entry. Together, we are beating cancer. T's and C's apply.
To be or not to be.
Right now, we're offering a range of incentives across Audi models.
That is the...
But only until the 28th of February.
The,
So stop whatever you're doing.
I'll be right back. Just carry on without me.
And find yours online or at your local Audi centre. Audi. Vorsprung durch Technik. Terms and conditions apply. Selected models, retail customers and participating Audi centres only.
A Southern Train is a place where you can have more me time. A chance to recharge yourself and your phone. To stretch out, sit back, and when you hear "All Change, Please," you'll know you already have. Go with your flow and save with advanced tickets at southernrailway.com. Terms apply.
At Pension B, we believe that when your pension is in a good place, you're in a good place. Download the app or go to pensionb.com and be pension confident when investing your capital is at risk.
Sun Life's guaranteed over 50 plan gave confidence to Jane and Chris. With their insurance sorted, they're becoming naturists. Cutting loose in their birthday suits, feeling elegant and free. But when they answered the door, the postman saw more than he expected to see. Sun Life, a little confidence goes a long way. No medical questions and a cash payout. Search Sun Life cover today.
Premiums paid could exceed the payment. Full cover after 1 year. Ages 49 to 85.
This is LBC. Message Ben Kentish on WhatsApp now on 0345 60 60973.
11:36. We'll talk more about the government boasting tonight about its record on deporting foreign criminals and illegal migrants. A little more on that in a couple of minutes' time. Let's talk to Angela first. Angela's a brand new caller in Clapham this evening to talk about whether it's right that Alton Towers has banned people with ADHD and anxiety and autism from using its disability pass for fast lane queuing. Angela, welcome to LBC.
Thank you. I was just calling really because I'm really in two minds about whether that they should be doing that or not. And I'm speaking as the grandmother of an autistic grandson. And I must say, when my son and daughter-in-law take the children to, you know, various parks, theme parks, Thorpe Park, Chessington, they actually don't make use of the disability pass because although my grandson really doesn't like the queuing, I mean, he does find it extremely difficult. They just say, you know, my son said they feel that there are other people that need it more, and that these queues, I mean, the disability queues, they say last summer when they were at theme park, they said they are just getting totally out of hand, where the disability queue is virtually the same length as the normal queue, but where people haven't got a special pass. There's one thing that I've been saying to them all along. I think the theme parks have only got themselves to blame because I think they let too many people in each day.
Right. And so the issue is they're drive for profits rather than the disabled queue jump per se.
Exactly. Yes, that's what they're looking at.
Does your grandchild's condition make it harder for him to queue?
Yes, it does. Yeah.
So then, why is that any different to somebody with rheumatoid arthritis that makes it harder for them to queue?
I don't know. I think it's difficult because he does find it unpleasant, and there are times when, after a certain length, he'll just say, to his mum or his dad, oh, right, I don't want to do it anymore, let's go. So then one will take him off, and then the other parent will stay with his sister, who's not, none too chuffed about the cues either.
I sort of think, look, we all find queuing unpleasant, but if a condition that you have, a medical condition or a disability, makes it harder than it would for somebody without that condition, whether that is a, you know, a bad back or you're in a wheelchair or you're autistic, I don't see any difference between those. If your condition makes it harder for you to queue than somebody without that condition, I think you should have the right to skip the queue.
100%, yes, I'm with you there. That's why I said I'm in two minds about it. But I think it's this issue of so many people being allowed in on each
day. Yes, that's the bigger problem. And if they actually restricted the numbers, then maybe they wouldn't have the issue. I hear you loud and clear. Angela, lovely to talk to you for the first time. Hope we'll have a second call very, very soon indeed. Tons of calls coming in on this. More of those to come in just a moment. Let's pause that conversation just for 2 minutes or so and look more now at the news tonight that Labour is heralding its success in increasing the number of foreign criminals and illegal migrants that have been deported from this country. According to a government announcement tonight, the number of foreign national offenders being deported is up a third, and the removal of illegal migrants increased by 45%. Shabana Mahmood tonight saying, I vow to scale up the removal of illegal migrants, and we have, but we must go further to remove those that have no right to be in our country. Robert Bates joins me, Research Director at the Centre for Migration Control. Robert, is this a rare success story for the government, / a UK government, when it comes to immigration?
Well, I think they've certainly improved on the situation that was left to them by the last Conservative government. I'm not sure if that's really saying much, though, given that really was an idea when it came to removing illegal migrants and foreign national offenders. I would also say, just to add context to this headline figure that I imagine we'll be hearing a lot of over the next 24 hours, these 58,500 returned from the country. If you actually break down that figure, about a third of those being returned are what's known as verified returns, where actually the Home Office has played very little, if any, role in that individual leaving the country, and they've only actually been able to verify that they've returned subsequently after the individual's left. Only about a quarter of that figure are what you'd call physical enforced.
So if an illegal migrants decide they've had enough of this country, they're sick of the weather, they're too many tube strikes, they're going back to Eritrea, and they leave voluntarily, those are included on the number of people that the government claims to have forcibly removed?
They'll be included in that 58,000 figure, yes. So they're saying removal, yeah, which is a very, it's very clever sort of statistical sleight of hand that we do see a lot of when it comes to these figures. So I think it's important to realise that this isn't somehow the overall figure indicative of the government suddenly charting a lot more flights or really, really getting tough with deportations. A lot of it is either individuals leaving without the Home Office knowing, or in about a quarter of instances, the individual being paid by the Home Office to leave. And this is particularly, I think, pernicious when it comes to foreign national offenders. You know, when you consider that poor girl that was sexually assaulted by Hadash Kabatu, how she reacted when she found out he'd been given a bung of money to leave the country. And, you know, she felt like he was almost being rewarded for what he'd done to her. And I think that's a real important consideration when it comes to the foreign national offender figures.
Because people get, I mean, is it £1,000 they can get up to leave the country voluntarily?
It is, in some instances, it can be as high as 3,000, foreign national offenders. And that can be used to sort of help them set up businesses or training or to access accommodation and things like that.
It's a bribe, basically.
It is effectively a bribe. It's effectively saying, please don't put up appeal after appeal if we pay you to go, and it will be a lot more smooth. And in many ways, it does cost less than a physical deportation, but in large part that is because the process of deportation is wrought with so many judicial reviews and human rights challenges that it ends up really taking a long time, and that, of course, incurs costs of accommodation and legal fees and so forth.
Gotcha. Robert, thank you very much indeed for coming on. Robert Bates, Research Director at the Centre for Migration Control. The time, 11:42. You're listening to Late Nights with Ben Kentish right here on LBC. We're talking about the decision today by Alton Towers to tell some people with hidden disabilities like anxiety and autism they can no longer use the disabled people's queue. What do you make of that, then? Moses is a new caller. Lots of new callers tonight in Slough. Hi, Moses.
Hi there.
Good to have you with us, Moses. Not so absolute pleasure. What do you think of this one? What do you think of Alton Towers' decision?
I think it's completely wrong. I do work in an airport and I see hundreds of people, and some of those people have certain hidden disabilities, and I see the difference it affects. kids, adults with different inner disability in different ways. A child with autism could be affected in a certain way while queuing, while another child could be having a massive problem only with boarding a flight. So I think the fact that you make a policy that's like one shoe fits all is absolutely wrong. It's not very clever business way, because you say to a whole group of people, yeah, you're not welcome in this premise. And also morally, it's a bit shallow. I think the society we live in, it doesn't really approve certain, at least I hope so, certain decisions, especially because if you say, well, certain people with physical disability take longer time to get to access the park, is that data driven? Do you have complaints? How did you come up with that decision? Are people complaining because they seem a bit unfair that people with hidden disability jump the queue? Are those people like morally correct in a way?
I'm interested. How does it? I can guess which airport you work at, given you're calling from Slough. Don't say it. But if somebody with a disability like anxiety or autism wanted to jump the long queue at airport security, would they be allowed to?
Yes, definitely. We have, when I say we have, because I work for an airline. So, and at the airport, you have separate lines. The line, obviously, is for both visible disability and hidden disability.
Right.
Passengers usually wear a sunflower lanyard, so to tell us that they have a hidden disability. At the gates, we pre-board them pretty much the same way. We don't distinguish between both of them. I think that's only fair, because you want a society that's fair and inclusive. Yeah.
It relies on trust, I guess, because, you know, I've got an ADHD diagnosis. It's quite mild. I hate queuing, but I think that's just because I hate queuing like everybody else. So yeah, I personally, because I don't think that condition has a big impact on my ability to queue, even though I was technically entitled to with your airline, I wouldn't dream of using that as a kind of reason to jump the queue. But somebody else with the same condition might find it completely unbearable to stand in queue. So I guess we're relying on people to not sort of abuse that allowance that's been made for them. But we have to leave it up to individuals, don't we, Moses, to an extent, to do the right thing.
Yeah, it's absolutely correct. And I found, I've interacted with some people who have anxiety, for example, right? So when they come to you and say, I suffer from anxiety, can I please board earlier? They say it with, they feel a bit uncomfortable even mention it.
Right.
They look at the other people queuing and they think, why, am I doing something wrong? And we try to make them feel welcome, which is, I think, is the right thing. And I think
good
what
for you.
Alton Tower should do, really, because I don't think they will employ staff that at the gates will at the entrance will be able to qualified
yes.
enough to distinguish
the
severity
risk.
Of the disability.
Yes.
Are they going to have physicians and doctors at the entrance?
And you're right, Moses. We don't want to get to a point where people with hidden disabilities feel that they are somehow sort of inferior or less disabled than somebody who is in a wheelchair, for example. I think that's a real, real risk if we continue down the road that Alton Towers has gone down. Lovely to have you with us for the first time, Moses. Really interesting first call. Thank you very much indeed. Lots more calls to come right after this. 11:46.
On the latest episode of The Newsagents.
With the calls for Keir Starmer's resignation getting louder and louder, we ask, is that really fair, or is it just the latest example of Westminster hypocrisy?
Get the latest episode of The Newsagents with Emily Maitlis, John Sopel and Lewis Goodall. Listen or watch on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
The Philly cheese stack is back at McDonald's, and it's still intensely cheesy. Imagine the cheesiest thing ever. Now cover it in cheese. Add 2 beef patties, cheddar cheese sauce, crispy onions, and even more cheese. The Philly cheese stack. Did we mention it's cheesy? Available until the 16th of March 2026 from 11 a.m. Fees apply to delivery orders. Price and participation may vary. Subject to availability. Darling, hold my hand.
Nothing beats that just booked feeling. Because when you book a Jet2 holiday, you start dreaming of pool days and seeing the sights. Get ahead for summer. Book now with just a £60 deposit per person. Choose from our best rooms and hotels and save £200 per couple. Nothing beats a Jet2 holiday. Package holidays you can trust. Up to natural protected. Subject to availability and conditions.
when you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics, with over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
On a windswept walk in Carmarthen, while someone tries to use your card details to hire a speedboat in Cannes, this is a moment you relax, knowing that Barclays Advanced Tech has helped to spot the fraud in under a second, and their expert team are on hand to close it down. So you can get back to being windswept. Ooh. Just one of the ways we're protecting our customers 24/7. Search Barclays Fraud Protection. Barclays. Make money work for you.
Most cars are designed for the road. The Mazda CX-30 is designed for you. Our stylish and compact SUV is available with 0% APR when ordered before the 31st of March. Mazda, crafted with Japanese soul. Search Mazda. Available on PCP when financed by Mazda Financial Services by the 30th of June 26. Indemnities may be required. Terms apply. See website.
You know that guy I've been seeing?
Yeah.
Turns out my sister's been seeing him too.
Oh, really?
And I heard he's been seeing Kelly at number 56. And Dave.
Your brother?
Yep.
Specsavers opticians and audiologists own and run their stores, so your care is their business, which can make them rather popular.
I've got something to tell you. I've got half an hour with him this afternoon.
Specsavers. Your care is our business. Book an appointment today.
Ben Kentish on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
11:49 after 12, Elon Musk tweets today, quite tragically, money doesn't make you happy. Sad face. If anyone would know, it's the world's richest man. Talk more about whether he's right about that after midnight. For now, let me come back to your thoughts on Alton Towers' decision to tell people with conditions like ADHD, autism and anxiety they can no longer use the disability pass fast lane queuing. Claire's yet another new caller in Telford tonight. Hi, Claire.
Good evening. Thank you very much for taking my call.
It's lovely to have you with us for the first time, Claire. What made you pick up the phone tonight?
Oh, because this going on about, you've been referring to Alton Towers that I've heard this evening. But what I firstly would like to say is it's not just Alton Towers, it's all Merlin theme parks. So that's Thorpe Park and Chessington.
Is it really? Well, I didn't realise that.
Yeah, it's a Merlin policy.
So it's quite a lot of the UK's major theme parks.
Yeah, it's Merlin, not just Alton Towers.
That's weird, it's only been sort of reported as
Alton
Towers.
Yeah, right. It's horrendous what's been in the media. So it is Merlin. And then also, it's always been referred to a queue jump.
Mm.
It's absolutely not.
Yeah,
It's ride access pass. So I have two children, both have autism.
Yes.
So theme parks for us are particularly difficult. However, roller coasters are the boys' special interest. They absolutely love Alton Towers because that's our local big theme park, obviously. But if you use the ride access pass system, it used to be a paper card that you were given. Now it's a virtual app that you have to use. So you go on the ride, and as you access the ride, the member of staff will literally time you out from your next ride for the time that the main queue is. So, for example, if you go on Smiler and the main Smiler queue is 90 minutes, you are then timed out of accessing any of the big rides for 90 minutes.
Why?
Because to make it fair. So if people in the main queue are waiting 90 minutes,
yes,
then we get timed out for 90 minutes. It's making it equitable.
So it's not really a queue jump?
It's not a queue jump in any way, shape, or form.
What will this change mean for you and your children, Claire?
For me and my children, it will mean that we won't access Alton Towers.
It will stop you going?
Yeah, absolutely.
And they love roller coasters.
It makes it inaccessible, yeah. Yeah, their bedroom is roller coaster themed. That's how much they love roller coasters.
What a shame that they're going to be stopped from going because of this. I mean, what would happen if they had to stand in a queue for 90 minutes? How would they find that?
I don't know how the rest of the public would find it, as they're screaming, shouting, throwing themselves around, hitting, biting, kicking.
Right.
you know, it's not just they don't like Kieran.
Mm. None of us like Kieran.
No, I don't
but
like
for
Kieran.
For people like your children and a lot of others, you it's know, not just not yeah. liking, it's physically unbearable for them.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. It's the people, the close proximity of the people, you know, and for the theme parks to say, oh, but it's okay because you can purchase a sensory bag for £25 and that will help.
What's a sensory bag, Claire?
So that is one of Alton Towers' adjustments. Mm. They will offer sensory bags, so a pair of ear defenders, some fidget toys, right, some snacks, but you have to buy the bag for £25.
And that won't make a big difference by the sounds of it to how your children will find that experience.
I take all that with me anyway. I don't leave the house without all of that kind of stuff.
So for this is a disaster for your family. This is, you know, this is an end, yeah, at least for now. And it's yeah, only half term for now, but if they do expand it more broadly, this is the end of them, yeah, going to quite a lot of UK theme parks.
Yeah, and that's awful. The other thing. When Merlin made the announcement, it wasn't announced as a trial. It was moving forward. This is
so. Have they
happening.
Now backtracked they and said backtracked. They're going to trial it? That's really interesting, Claire. I hadn't realised that as well. Thank you for bringing that to our awareness. I was wrong on this. I can't listen to Claire and say Claire's poor children shouldn't be able to go to theme park because they're autistic. That is disability discrimination, isn't it? It's hard to argue it isn't, I think. Thank you, Claire. Lovely to talk to you tonight. Kelly's on Merseyside. Hi, Kelly.
Hiya.
What do you think of that? I mean, how do we defend Alton Towers and Merlin Entertainment here, given what Claire's just said?
Well, I mean, I think we're at the point now where there's so many people with a disability that how can they keep giving out all these, you know, passes all the time? Like, it's getting to the point where there's probably going to be more people with a disability than without.
But do you not think, to an extent, we just have to rely on that people who are disabled will do the right thing and only apply for one of these passes if they genuinely need it?
Yeah, you would absolutely hope so, yeah. But, you know, because there's just sadly, like, so many more people with different conditions, that probably a line has to be drawn somewhere, because if you've got a genuine disability, like, you start struggling to access what you actually need.
But hold on. Claire's children have got a genuine disability. And they won't be able to get this pass.
Yeah, I get that. But then, like, someone in a wheelchair who might need that more. Like,
why do they need it? Why does someone in a wheelchair need it more than Claire's children who can't physically bear to stand in a queue?
Well, no one likes queuing. Like, nobody likes queuing.
But that's completely different. They don't like queuing. They can't do it because they're autistic. They physically can't be in a queue because of their autism. In the same way as someone who physically can't stand in a queue because they lost the use of their legs. I don't really see the difference.
Well, I just think, like, there is so many people with everything now. Like, I think Alton Towers have been bold to do this.
Bold or wrong?
Bold.
Bold in a good way?
I just think, like, someone had to draw the line somewhere.
But why do you draw the line at hidden disabilities?
I don't draw the line. I don't dismiss hidden disability, but I can see from their perspective.
But they're dismissing it, Kelly, aren't they? They're dismissing it. They're telling... They're telling Claire and her children that they have less right or less need to get a disability pass than someone who's got a bad knee.
I don't think it's manageable anymore.
Kelly, they clearly are, because someone who says, look, I'm disabled, I've got a I don't know what the conditions, I've got something wrong with my leg that means I can't stand, they'll get waved through, and poor Claire's children, who have got a disability as well and can't queue, won't. So I think it's wrong. I think they're drawing a distinction that doesn't really exist, based on not an awful lot at all. Thanks, Kelly. Lovely to hear your perspective. Rob's in Maidstone to probably wrap up the conversation, Rob, unless you're very quick. Hi, Rob.
Hi, Ben. So I've been backwards and forwards on this one.
Me too.
Thank God you've got a good production crew.
They're all right, you know. They're cheering behind the glass at you.
Yeah, no, they talked to me long enough. So I realised my real issue here is the lack of nuance again.
Go on, Rob.
We've had this discussion about we try and make absolute rules to cover everything. And then we have things like the lady who phoned in with her two children who definitely need it. And your next caller goes, there are too many people with disabilities. As someone with hidden disabilities, I know how difficult it is to access any type of help unless you can prove yourself. So we have a local place that I can go to, and they advertise disability access and lower prices and all sorts of good things. But I need to produce a letter from either a letter from PIP or a disability rail card or my blue badge or something to prove that I have a disability.
Right.
So I sort of go, part of me goes, well, that's okay, because they're trying to manage things. So as they're giving me a discount, then maybe that's okay. I don't need that if I want to go to the theatre. I can just tell them I have a problem.
I think that's how it should be.
Yeah, but I see. But then, you, like that lady, there's so many people with so many conditions, and the queues. I go, well, the queue issue is what one of your earlier callers said. That's about the management of the park. Mm. It isn't about the patrons turning up. So when companies start telling you how disabled you have to be to have support, we have a problem.
Yes, and when they do that simply based on the condition, because there will be people with really serious conditions, like, let's take cancer, for example. There are people with cancer who are clearly in no position to be able to queue. And there will be other people with different types of cancer at a different stage who, thankfully, it doesn't affect their physical being whatsoever. So Alton Towers coming out and saying, well, people with cancer can't jump the queue would be outrageous. But I don't see why it's that different when they're using that logic with autism or ADHD.
Yeah, because with my mental health conditions, it's variable. So one day I might go to Alton Towers and I would be fine to stand in the queue.
Yep.
And another day, I physically can't. I will shake, I will sweat, I will be rude, all sorts.
Yes.
But I also have a balance issue. Sorry.
This is it. Rob, I'm so sorry I've got to leave it there and move on. But you have to... Each case is different. And people, even with the same condition, will find the experience of, in this case, queuing very different. That's why you can't have blanket policies. You have to do it on a case-by-case basis. And you have to trust people with those disabilities to not abuse it if they don't need it, but to give it to them if they do. Thank you, Rob. Very, very, very interesting conversation. Coming up the other side of the news, another one, though. Elon Musk has come out today with a slightly curious post on X. Money doesn't make you happy, he says, alongside a miserable face. This is the world's richest man with wealth of $800 billion. If he's not happy, then he's got a point, hasn't he? Is it right? Money doesn't buy happiness.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at midnight, the Prime Minister has apologised to Jeffrey Epstein's victims for falling for Peter Mandelson's lies about appointing him as the ambassador to the US. Sir Keir Starmer says he regrets the decision following allegations Mandelson was passing sensitive information to the late sex offender. There have been suggestions Epstein had links to Russian authorities. Leader of the Liberal Democrats, Ed Davey, has told LBC he thinks the Prime Minister is being complacent about that.
A lot of sources are worried that what Epstein was doing was almost classic KGB sting operations with honey traps, with Russian young women. And so the sense that this was organised in some depth is deeply troubling.
Mandelson denies any wrongdoing. A teacher who was attacked by a pupil at a school in Pembrokeshire has been discharged from hospital. Police say Milford Haven Comprehensive was placed in lockdown this afternoon and a teenager arrested on suspicion of attempted murder. An inquiry has found the deaths of at least 30 people who died while attempting to cross the English Channel could have been prevented. Their inflatable vessel overturned in November 2021 during one of the deadliest small boat crossings on record. Only two people survived. The government says almost 60,000 illegal migrants and convicted criminals have been removed or deported from the UK since Labour came to power in 2024. The Home Secretary, Shabana Mahmood's, vowed to scale up deportations even further. But Robert Bates from the Centre for Migration Control told LBC this evening that we should take the figures in context.
About a third of those being returned are what's known as verified returns, where actually the Home Office has played very little, if any, role in that individual leaving the country. This isn't somehow the overall figure indicative of the government suddenly charting a lot more flights or really, really getting tough with deportations. A lot of it is either individuals leaving without the Home Office knowing or the individual being paid by the Home Office to leave.
Two options have been put forward to restore the Houses of Parliament at a cost of up to £40 billion. One option that would see all members of the House move out while work takes place would be quicker and cost less than half that. But if the work was carried out in stages, it could take more than 60 years to complete. LBC weather. Cloudy in the north today, with rain turning to snow on the hills in eastern areas. Drier with some sunny breaks to the west, a high of 11 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Daryl Jackson.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Ben Kentish.
It's after 12. It's officially Friday morning, almost the weekend. We're almost there. One more hour of my programme this week. And we're going to talk about Elon Musk's slightly uncharacteristic moment of sadness on his X account today, when he seemed to express that he's not a very happy man, despite being worth $800 billion, yes, billion, US dollars, and being well on track to become the world's first ever trillionaire. I mean, it's money that you can barely begin to imagine. His bank balance is not too far off the entire size of the UK economy, just to put that in some context. Far richer than any man has ever been in history, and getting richer and richer by the second. And yet, what's it all for, you might well wonder? Because a lot of us, I think, spend a lot of our time and energy and focus chasing money in the belief that if we can just earn a bit more, or have the car that we want, or get the trainers that we like, or the handbag, or maybe the second home, or maybe the yacht if you're particularly ambitious, then all will be well and we'll be finally, finally happy. And we probably know, don't we, if we're honest deep down, that that's not right. And yet a lot of people do it anyway. A lot of people find money sort of very high up their priority list. Not, I think, because of its, not because they sort of want it in its own right, but because there is this idea that if you just are rich, then everything else will fall into place. Well, don't take my words that it's not true. Take the words of the world's richest man, who posted on X today, whoever said money can't buy happiness really knew what they were talking about. Sad face. Elon Musk using his X account as a bit of a sort of therapy platform to express the fact that he's, it seems, not very happy at all. And if $850 billion can't buy you happiness, then clearly no money can. So why do we all think that it can? Why do we have such a confidence or a belief, a conviction maybe, that actually money will be the thing that finally brings us the contentment, the joy, the happiness that all of us ultimately want from our life? That's my question to you, really. Is Elon Musk right? Is Elon Musk right to say money can't buy you happiness? Or do you just look at that and think, well, it's all right for you to say, Elon, isn't it? It's all right for you to say, have you banked your $850 billion? It's easy to say when you're that rich, money doesn't buy happiness. If you're struggling to pay the bills right now and your kids are going to school in old school uniforms because you can't buy a new one, and that fills you with a sense of shame and sadness every single morning you send them out the front door, then that clearly is a link between money and happiness. If you're getting hungry tonight because, you know, you couldn't afford much for dinner, that clearly is a link between money and happiness. And there are many, many more. If you're homeless, if you're spending all your money on the rent and you have nothing left over to do the things you enjoy doing, the things that give you joy in life, there's clearly a link between money and happiness to an extent, isn't there? But I also think Elon Musk is right to say money can't buy it. It's not a guarantee of happiness. You tell me what you think. Is Elon Musk right, indisputably, undeniably right to say money cannot buy you happiness? Is there just no debate to be had about that in your view? Maybe you've made quite a lot of money. Did it buy you happiness? Did it bring joy to you? Maybe you're not particularly well off and you think, well, it's easy for him to say, if I just had a little, even a little bit more, I know for a fact that I would feel happier about my life. How do we sort of assess this statement? Does money buy you happiness, do you think? Did it for you? Do you think it would for you if you're not particularly well off now? 0345 6060 973, the number. Lots of ways to come at that question tonight. Whatever your thoughts are on that statement from Elon Musk and the accuracy of it, pick up the phone this morning and let me know. 0345 6060 973. Can money buy you happiness? Has it for you? Let's talk about it all before I come to your thoughts with Emma Sinclair, MBE, who is a businesswoman, entrepreneur, chief executive of the software company Enterprise Alumni. Emma, always a pleasure to have you on the show. Thanks very much, Nick, for coming on. I think it's a bit of a sort of sad post from Elon Musk today, that money hasn't bought him happiness, clearly. What do you make of it?
I mean, I saw it. I do keep my eye on Twitter. And when I think the world's richest man says that, it kind of is the best and biggest stress test of the idea. You know, in theory, if anyone's should be immune to money-related anxiety, it's him in our heads. And clearly, you know, he's not. And clearly, happiness is not a byproduct of wealth. My position is that money doesn't buy happiness, but it absolutely buys optionality. And optionality removes a huge amount of stress from life. You know, what it doesn't do is it doesn't give you meaning, it doesn't give you purpose, it doesn't give you emotional stability. Those are separate systems. But as a friend of mine once said to me when we were much younger about someone who was permanently depressed but extremely wealthy, they would say, well, you know, she is depressed, but she's depressed at the finest hotels in the world. So I think there's two different things, right? That there's the optionality of removing some stress from life and life giving you meaning and purpose.
I mean, I guess it depends how much you've got, because if you are living in poverty, then obviously that has a huge impact on your psychological state. And actually, even another 10, 20, 30,000 pounds of income a year would make an enormous difference to your well-being. But I guess is what we're saying, Emma, that above a certain point where you've got, you know, financial security, independent stability, more and more millions doesn't actually make you any kind of any happier or more joyful.
I think... Yeah, as you say, look, there's a very big difference between not having enough money, which is genuinely miserable, and having more than enough, right? Once your basics are covered, then happiness stops being a financial problem, right? It starts being a human one, a more philosophical one about the meaning, about the purpose. So I think, you know, demonstrably, money does solve problems, but it doesn't solve life problems, you know, the gratification from life. And I think confusing the two is where people go wrong, right? There's being happy and there's having your problems being solved. So, you know, Ben, I run a company. As an entrepreneur, does it buy me happiness? No, but it buys me some happiness because it buys me the ability to purchase back some time, reduce my stress. But accumulating material possessions doesn't really fit into that. So but two separate things,
I think. But it buys you security, Emma, I guess. You know that if you lose your job, you're not going to be out in the street homeless, for example. There's a safety net that comes with wealth that a lot of people, I guess, you know, don't have and would probably quite like to have.
I don't disagree at all, Ben. And, you know, a friend of my husband always calls money, I don't know if it's appropriate for LBC, but calls money life lube. He says, it really does. The reason I slipped off my tongue is
he says right, it's all after the time midnight, out. It's fine.
There we are. It's exactly past the
life
watershed.
Lube.
And I'll tell you why. He always says, effectively, that you can slip through life a bit easier and it removes the friction. And I actually think that's not a bad way to think about it, right? It does. It certainly reduces stress, reduces friction. It doesn't necessarily give you meaning and purpose or emotional stability. Mm. That's why I go back to saying, you know, that tweet in theory is just like, oh, you know, what a loser saying that. We're the world's richest man.
Yeah.
But actually, it's a big difference between money-related anxiety, which most of us, even me, can relate to, right? I couldn't cover everything where they're a terrible problem for the longest amount of time.
Yeah.
And then there's the happiness side of things and that what actually gives you true meaning and purpose. And I think almost anybody I know would concur that, you know, you can't buy happiness. You can buy fun distractions. Mm-hmm. But you can't buy real happiness.
And yet there is this sort of idea, isn't there? Very, very widespread idea in our modern world, Emma, that money does buy happiness, that if you just get rich, then everything else will be perfect. And I totally accept what you're saying, that actually money can't make you happy in and of itself. Why do so many of us spend so much time, so much of our lives chasing it, do you think?
I think human nature is to say, if I had this, then I would that. And I can relate to that because I've built a company and I started from nothing. And I always used to think, next year I'll be able to do this. When I have made this, when the business hits this target, I'll slow down. You know, when I have this, then that can possibly happen. And money is a source of so much anxiety because it lubricates our life in every single way. I don't have enough for this. I want to buy my child this. I'd like to take a better holiday. So there's always that aspiration, financial, professional, sometimes personal, sometimes class and status. People often think if I just have one more thing, then that will sate me, that will satisfy me, and I will be okay. But you have to question yourself and say, is that a right way to live? Always saying, just one more thing, you know, like kids,
yes,
just
only,
one more minute, television. Yeah, I just need 10 more minutes and then I'll be ready for bed. Just one more sweet. Is that really the answer? No, but you know, sometimes we think just a little bit more will make it possible. And I also think, Ben, in the way that you'll no doubt relate to, right? You look at somebody else having a wonderful life, lovely clothes, traveling first class, big houses, you know, the things that most of us don't have, and maybe mm-hmm. we have a nice holiday, but that life is well beyond the life that we live. And we think, well, wouldn't that be wonderful? If I had all of that, then anything else in life, you know, wouldn't be a stress. But it's not really true, right? It's just because you have wealth, it doesn't mean, you know, that it takes away.
Yes. It was interesting. We had Jake Humphries, the broadcaster on the show the other day, who does a hype podcast called High Performance, where he interviews lots of very successful people.
I've been on it.
Have you really? Oh, fantastic. Well, I'm sure he wasn't talking about you.
I've got a funny story for you one day about doing Jake's...
Is it airable?
It's airable.
Tell me that in a minute. But he was basically said, I'm sure you were the 15% Emma, but he said, of all the sort of successful, high-earning people he's interviewed, he reckons 85% of them aren't happy at all. Because, as you say, they're constantly chasing the next thing. They might have got to the very top of their field, the very top of their profession. And they're either thinking, what's next? Or they're thinking, my God, how do I stay here? So, you know, he's talking about success more broadly, but obviously that often comes with wealth.
Yeah.
And his conclusion was that 85% of the people they've had on that podcast are quite miserable.
Well, I mean, look, the High Performance podcast, I think, probably disproportionately features people who have very skewed lives, perhaps mine being one of them, having told you that I was on it, right? So,
what's your
story? I mean, for example... pardon?
And then I want to hear the story. Go on, go on.
Yes, I will tell you. I will tell you because Jake Humphries was a name I didn't recognise when I went on that. So I'll tell you what happened when I joined it. So people go on there who are high performers in sports, in business, high achievement, people who, you know, massively multitask and might be building an empire whilst saving the children, whilst, you know, just no one really goes on there who has what I would describe as the most chill life, right? You've done something that's kind of maybe had some momentum, some excitement, some outward applause, whatever it might be, but you're probably not someone who has what one might constitute as significant work-life balance. And I suspect, therefore, that the 85%, I'm sure there's lots of people that would argue that 85% probably have given up quite a lot of the, you know, what I started by saying, the meaning, the purpose, or the emotional stability for some sort of achievement that is professional. So perhaps, you know, you might have hit an amazing target or an amazing achievement professionally, but perhaps that has meant you have, you know, if you're an athlete, you've got up at 4 a.m. every day and you haven't taken your children to school. You know, you've built an empire and it's global, but maybe that means you've been on a plane for the last 10
years. You don't see your family and friends,
You know, so there's, I think, as we all know, and as you don't, you undoubtedly know, Ben, more than me, you know, nothing is ever quite what it seems on the outside. There are always complications. And so, you know, I think when I think about some of the happiest people I've met, they're definitely not the people that are the wealthiest.
Just finally, I mean, no one's going to be sort of getting out the tiny violins, I don't think, for Elon Musk too quickly, given he's worth $800 billion. But I do wonder if, as well as all the benefits of wealth, and I'm talking about serious, serious wealth here, there are also probably quite a lot of challenges that come with it that might be quite miserable. I'm thinking about the security risks. Yeah. I'm thinking about constantly wondering if people want to be sort of friends or romantically involved with you because of your money. I imagine it's quite lonely. You know, I mean, there's challenges that come with being super wealthy as well as benefits, I imagine.
Look, I mean, I first of all, I wouldn't know, but I look forward to having the answer. And I'll be sure to call you.
Let us know when you find out.
Yeah, I'll phone you from my island.
Get in touch. You know the number, 0345, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I know exactly where to dial on LBC. But I would say a couple of... I can use a life example. I have an investor who has backed me since the very early days of our business. Now we have institutional investors, you know, significant monies. But back in the day, we used to have small angel checks and people that would back us. And one of my investors is the most spectacular woman, extremely accomplished, has IPO'd a business, is a goddess of a human, is kind to everybody, you name it. And for example, she had a challenging divorce and a nasty ex-husband is the most wonderful two children and wants a date. And while she does not have expectations or needs, she also owns vast amount of real estate all over the world, has IPO'd, is quite famous. And actually, like, we can't, we were, a few of us women were having lunch recently, and we can't just send her on a date with like a normal person in many ways, because her house has massive security. Her house has a lift, for goodness sake. It was the first house I'd ever been to that had a lift. You know, it's like, it's not, not, and yet she is the salt of the earth kind of human being, but her life is different. So again, it's not violins, but I think, you know, it's like the royal family or something else. There are pros and cons. So, yeah, you know, you say the security, whether people want something from you.
The intrusion,
I look at sometimes at people who are being kind of obliterated in the press that it doesn't seem fair. You're like, where did someone get that photo of some party you went to 14 years ago when you were young and reckless and a bit drunk and it doesn't necessarily fit what you're doing now? You know, maybe it makes you a significantly more of a target than your average person, and you have to watch your behaviour, watch yourself in public, watch what you say. So I think, as you say, lots of people wouldn't necessarily have sympathies per se. But I'm sure, like everything in life, when you, with you know, with great power comes great responsibility, and I imagine with great finance comes great responsibility too.
Emma, thank you so much indeed. That's Emma Sinclair, MB, businesswoman, entrepreneur, chief executive of the software company Enterprise Alumni. What do you think? Does money buy you happiness? Is it only people as wealthy as Elon Musk that tell you it doesn't? Did it for you? Or do you think it would for you? 0345 6060973. Get your thoughts coming in on that. Is Elon Musk right to say money can't buy you happiness? And if it can't buy you happiness, what can it buy you? If it's not money that brings happiness to you, then what is it? What is the key to a happy life? That's a philosophical question for you, isn't it? On a Friday morning, pick up the phone, 0345 6060973. Ben Kentish here. This is LBC.
This is LBC.
One of the best things about a holiday with Saga is your chauffeur, who'll pick you up and drive you to your departure point. Whether you're river cruising along the Rhine, past storybook castles, or uncovering centuries of history on a tour of Japan. Even better, they'll pick you up and drive you home again afterwards. 2026 season now on sale. Search Saga Holidays. Experience is everything. Nationwide chauffeur service available on UK mainland. Full terms apply, over 50s only.
When you leave a gift in your will to guide dogs, where could it lead? It might lead to our specialists helping someone regain their independence, like Jenny.
I'd just gone from everything to nothing. She gave me my freedom back. She gave me my confidence back.
Your gift to guide dogs could lead to a future where lives are transformed. Find out how to make your life-changing will for free. Search Guide Dogs, Free Wills.
Guide Dogs.
Ben Kentish on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
It's 20 past 12. I don't think money buys you happiness outright. I don't think it's a guarantee by any means. But I absolutely agree with Emma that it, life lube was a good phrase, it makes it easier. And I think indirectly, actually, it can buy you happiness. You know, I think back to, and I was talking with some family about this recently, we were talking about our best memories of the last decade. And almost all the things that people were bringing up were trips or experiences. Do you remember when we went to that lovely hotel? Do you remember that amazing holiday we had? Do you remember that really nice dinner, that restaurant we went to for your 40th birthday? Now, all of those things require money. And it wasn't the money as such that had brought the joy. But I think money allows you to buy experiences like travelling, like going to lovely places or lovely restaurants, that does bring a sense of joy, especially when you're doing it with loved ones. I guess when you're as rich as Elon Musk, though, that sort of ceases, that loses its allure and its luster because you're doing it all the time. So maybe, you know, for me, I remember going to a fancy hotel with my wife for a night or going away for my birthday with my family like I did last year to a nice hotel. I remember that because it's a treat and it was a special occasion. If your whole life is just Michelin star restaurants and you know, jetting around the world and fancy cars and sort of Michelin star and lovely hotels, then maybe quickly it becomes less special. So maybe money above a certain point buys you happiness, but perhaps when you get to Elon Musk's wealth, maybe there's too much of it. I don't know. 0345 6060973. What do you think? I've always had a dream of buying a little farmhouse in Spain that would cost money. It would be a second home, right? It's not something that most people have. But the reason I want it isn't just because it's wealth. I want it so I can take my kids there in the summer and have, you know, sort of family gatherings there and so on. I want it as a means to an end. The money becomes the vehicle for something else. In this case, in my case, the ability to have big family gatherings in a lovely part of the world at a house that I own. to have my kids' friends come on holiday and stay there. You know, it's not the point of having the property. It's the things that it brings. Who knows if I'll ever get there? But that's why I want it. Not just so I can say I own a farmhouse in the south of Spain. Let me come to your calls. Is Elon Musk right to say that money can't buy your happiness? Anna's going to kick us off in Hull this morning. Morning, Anna.
Oh, good morning. You might want to fact check this first thing I'm going to say, because I don't know what the source of it is. But
that's a solid start, Anna. Go on. I'm worried. No,
I'm being honest. So a friend of mine said to me that Elon Musk now owns more than most countries, and that there's only 25 countries that have more money than him, countries as a whole. So that is something that you'd want to check, maybe.
I don't know if that's right, Anna, but it sounds feasible.
And also, it was another broadcaster on LBC at one point. I can't remember the exact figure, but it was so big that it was meaningless to me. That he earned 660 million a day or something. It was a huge amount anyway.
You can't fathom that amount of money, can you?
I know. And, you know, if you just for a moment forget whether you're really rich or really poor, but if you're feeling ever really down, sometimes it just gives you purpose or makes you feel better to actually help somebody else. And if you're somebody that has more money than every country except for 25, surely, you know, it would just be like a little bit of the loose change in his pocket could sort out the waterways in this country, or give children in Africa water wherever they need it, or any education system. I mean, you couldn't even write the list in a day.
Do you think that would bring him happiness, though? It might bring him a bit more of a sense of purpose, I guess, Anna.
I don't know if it would, because I'm not convinced that he could do that. I don't know if he's capable of doing that.
Well, he does. He does give money to a lot of causes that he believes in. I mean, the issue for many of us is that the causes he believes in is the far right. But he gives a lot of money to sort of far-right political parties, as I understand it. So he is using his money in a way that he thinks is for the good of the world. I would strongly disagree with it. But he's doing some of that already, I guess.
Well, not if it's not for the good of the world and the good of just people's survival and comfort.
But if he thinks it is, then wouldn't that bring him the same sense of purpose as if he gave money to the things that you or I would rather he gave them to, Anna?
Well, it's not making him happy, is it?
Maybe you should stop funding the German far right and start giving money to some African children, for example. Yes.
And what I could also say is that there are sort of him and the people that he associates with, other politicians, that I fear that a lot of people in this country are sleepwalking into thinking that these other politicians are going to change anything. And if you just look at where their assets are, that shows you that they're stockpiling them outside of the country, which isn't patriotic, and they're not using them
for good.
These kind of things. Yeah, for the general good and comfort. Somebody mentioned money being about comfort, not happiness, and just have enough.
Well, it can definitely buy that. It can definitely buy comfort, but you don't need a great deal of it to be comfortable, do you? You know, to be able to do live the sort of life you want to live, not worry about sort of losing a job or having to lose your home and so on. That's not millions and millions of pounds to be comfortable. Anna, we fact-checked you, I'm afraid.
I've
got to say you were wrong.
Oh, okay.
It's not 25 countries that are richer than Elon Musk. It's actually only 20.
Countries.
You underestimated how wealthy Elon Musk is. As of early 2026, Elon Musk's net worth exceeds the annual GDP of more than 170 countries. Yes, exactly. Quite incredible. Big sums of money. Thank you, Anna. Great to have you with us to kick off the conversation this morning. Let's talk to Max in Camden about whether money can buy you happiness in your view, Max. Morning to you.
Hi, Ben. Good morning to you. Well, of course it helps. I mean, you know, get past the obvious. It's a tool which can give you choices in life, can move you around the planet, can start up situations that you might want to progress with in terms of changing society or helping society. So, yes, it's a huge, huge, huge tool, but that's all, basically. And I think from an individual point of view, you have to sort of get the, my logic I've come to my social life is basically never compare, because it's just completely crazy, and we try to compare given all the kind of media stuff we get from social media, etc., but don't. That's my point. Look around you and say, okay, sky, universe, whatever. I know it sounds a bit
yeah, but Max, that's easy. I think that's easy to say when you've got enough. If you are struggling to pay the bills and your friends aren't, or your children are going to school in school uniform that you can't afford to repair and their friends aren't, then don't compare is an easy thing to say. I think don't compare applies when you're comfortable financially. But if you're struggling in a way that most people aren't, then of course you're going to compare yourself to others.
Okay, point taken, and I'll come back to that.
Please do.
Right.
Go on, fire away.
By saying I've been there, you know, I've been there so many times. Well, I was sort of beat up and down successfully, but always kind of trying to be think positively in a good way. So when I was in my time when I had no money at all, I was about 35 grand overdrawn, living in a YMCA, and I went out with this friend of mine who I'd known for a while back, university, he was the head of an advertising agency, etc. And it came to the end of the meal. It came to more than I could have afforded to go halfway. And luckily, he paid, and as he threw down his credit card, said, peanuts.
Really?
And I had to kind of swallow the whole thing.
How did that make you feel?
To walk. What?
How did you feel in that moment, Matt? Because I bet you did compare yourself then. You can't help
it. I felt I was putting on a brave face and being crushed by life.
Yeah.
So I understand. That's what my point is. That I understand what it's like to be in situations where what you want to do, which would be for enjoyment and survival, like let's go to coffee at McDonald's or this, you can't do in that environment. That's my point.
Yes, completely. Do you think that ever stops it? Because I bet, you know, that Bill Gates will be comparing himself to Elon Musk, right? Jeff Bezos is probably thinking, why aren't I the richest man in the world? So however much you have, is it not human? And I agree with you, it's not a healthy thing to do. But is it not human nature to compare ourselves to others, even when we've got more than the vast majority of people like those super rich businessmen will have?
So you think, you've hit the nail on the head. Basically, you've hit the nail on the head, which is that don't compare, because, and don't, that shouldn't be a priority about your status or somebody else's status. Of course, extremes are appalling, like if you're on the streets or whatever, it's a different argument.
That's different.
But the argument we're talking about now is whether you should see having money as a gift and an asset, or being blessed, as they say, which is a ridiculous phrase. No, it's not. And I'm happy now, just for the moment. I will change when I make a few million in a couple of years, and you never know, I will.
Get back in touch, Max, then. we'll do a compare and contrast. I wouldn't want it. I don't know about you. If you said to me, you might not believe this, but if you said to me, do you want Elon Musk's life and all his money?
No.
I would say no, thank you very much.
Absolutely, 100,000%.
Would you agree with that?
I'm 1,000%.
Why,
and also, I happen to know that, you know, he's not happy at all. So, in other words, but he's doing things, he's driven, that's great. But as far as happiness is concerned, look around you and think, thank God, I'm just about alive. I've got, in this country, NHS, blah, 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 blah. Plus, you know, you can do anything you want, really, if you put your mind to it.
And all the evidence, isn't it? We're getting very philosophical here, but all the evidence is from all the scientists. There's a study that Harvard did over basically the best part of a century, I think it was, on what leads to people ending towards the end of their life thinking that they've had a good life and feeling happy. And the thing that comes through time and time and time again, not money, it's not the car you've got or the clothes you wear, it's the quality of your relationships with your friends and family. And I mean, I don't want to presume, but from what we know about Elon Musk's personal life, he's got a lot of money. I would think, from what we read, his relationships are pretty sorely lacking, and I wouldn't swap that for anything. I'd rather have good relationships, have friends, have family who I love and love me, than have 850 billion pens in the dollars in the bank, personally. Some people might disagree. Max, lovely to talk to you. Thank you very much. And you'd have a wonderful weekend. More of your calls to come in just a moment on whether Elon Musk is really right to say money can't buy happiness, or whether you think that's a bit literally rich coming from him. Plus,
the little pigeon cyborg then wears a solar-powered backpack, which carries a controller preloaded with a flight path.
Russia is using new technology as part of its military, cyborg pigeons. I kid you not, but how worried should we be? We'll talk more about cyborg pigeons with chips implanted in their brain right after the news headlines here on LBC with Daryl Jackson.
The Conservative leaders told LBC the Prime Minister or his Chief of Staff should lose their job over Peter Mandelson's appointment. Sir Keir Starmer's apologised for falling for Mandelson's claims about his friendship with Jeffrey Epstein before he was made US ambassador. A teacher who was attacked at a school in Pembrokeshire has been discharged from hospital. A teenager has been arrested on suspicion of attempted murder. And the government says almost 60,000 illegal migrants and convicted criminals have been removed or deported from the UK since Labour came to power in 2024. The Home Secretary, Shabana Mahmood, vowed to scale up deportations even further. LBC weather, cloudy in the north today with rain turning to snow on the hills in eastern areas. Drier with some sunny breaks to the west, a high of 11 degrees.
This is LBC.
Nothing beats that just booked feeling. Because when you book a Jet2 holiday, you start dreaming of pool days and seeing the sights. Get ahead for summer. Book now with just a £60 deposit per person. Choose from our best rooms and hotels and save £200 per couple. Nothing beats a Jet2 holiday. Package holidays you can trust. Attra Natural Protected. Subject to availability and conditions.
I'm going to tell you exactly what you need to do. Dominate your finances.
Sunday morning, listening to questionable financial advice from the FinTok Bros on his social feed.
Drowning in green. Scale, 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 scale.
This is the moment Isaac chose to search Barclays Life Skills, get some better money intel, and save up for that new skateboard. We're helping young people become money confident. Search Barclays Life Skills. Barclays. Make money work for you.
When you switch the family's unlimited plans to Vodafone, you save. So while Nan's learning to voice note,
can you hear this? Is this on?
You're saving. While your daughter's setting a new high score on her favourite game.
Get in!
You're saving. While your son's video calling his crush for 3 hours.
I love you more.
You're saving. Save more when you switch your family's plans to Vodafone. With Vodafone together. Eligible plans from the 30th of October. Credit check and terms apply.
This is LBC. Message Ben Kentish on WhatsApp now on 0345 6060973.
12:35. We're having a very philosophical discussion, aren't we, this Friday morning here on LBC. Elon Musk posting that whoever said money can't buy happiness got it right, alongside a sad face that suggests he's not particularly happy. But is he right to say that the link that people think is there between wealth and happiness simply isn't? It's a myth. It's a capitalist lie, maybe. 0345 6060973. Or do you think actually it certainly helps? Might not buy happiness, but can you have happiness if you're living in poverty? Maybe you can. I don't know. What do you think? Michael's calling from Lowestoft in Suffolk. Nice part of the world. Morning, Michael.
Morning, Ben. How are you?
I'm good, sir, thanks. How about you?
I'm not too bad. Thank you very much, my man. Yeah. What did you say, Ben? I think you've been an all-round, you're a great presenter, actually.
Oh, that's so kind of you, Michael. Thank you.
I think you've really done well, come across really well-rounded, and you've always come across really compassionate to me. And you're on the side of the people, so it means a lot.
Oh, Michael, that's a very, very lovely thing for you to say. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Does money buy happiness? What do you think?
Yeah, I think my point, I'm a bit torn between them all, really. I've got lots of layers on it, actually, Ben, because how many rich people do you... It's always rich people who say, oh, it's not all about the money. There's not many poor people say, you know. It's rich people who say that normally.
Yes. It's easy for Elon Musk to say money doesn't buy happiness. Yes.
Of course it is. But, you know, I know you don't know me, but can I just start by saying I come from a different generation. I'm 52.
Okay.
But if I had his money, I know you don't know me, but I've got no reason to lie. If I had his money, if I could keep a little bit, Mm. Yeah, so I wasn't starving, but I knew that's enough to keep me going and my boy, and I'll give it away.
How much would you keep, Michael? What for you would be enough?
That's a hard question, I suppose, but let's say I had billions like him. I don't know how much he's got.
$850 billion US dollars.
$850 billion.
It's crazy sums, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, can you imagine if you give a million, sir?
So you'd keep a million of it, would you? And that would be enough for you?
If I kept a million, Ben,
yeah,
I'd be over the moon.
Do you not think, and I might be wrong on this.
Can you imagine how many people, sorry to interrupt, but how many people's lives could you change by giving the rest of that away?
I mean, you'd change the world. You could alleviate poverty overnight.
So
Michael, are you saying that actually that's what would bring you the happiness? That giving the money to people in need is how you,
you know,
how you get happiness from wealth?
I'd sleep like a log, knowing I've helped that many people.
Mm.
I mean, there's starving kids in the world, Ben.
Yep.
We've got it all wrong.
Yep.
I won't get deep on you. I'm not going to say anything out of order, but the system we've created is crippling people.
Michael, I love it. Money buys happiness if you use it to help others.
Thank you.
I love
that. Look what we're doing. It's all in one corner. And the rest of the world's struggling.
Yeah.
I know how it is. I put the heat on and off, Ben. Okay? I live a very basic life. Mm. Yeah? And I'll tell you this story, and I think that's why it put me on. You've probably got to let me go.
No, I haven't. Michael, I could talk to you tonight.
Well, thank you.
And I love what you're saying. I think, it's lovely, isn't it? If Elon Musk gave away, even 840, even if he kept $1 billion and gave the other 849 away.
$1 billion.
What does he need? How can you spend that money? How can you spend it?
$1 million to me, $1 million.
Yeah.
If I buy a couple of little properties in my local village.
But this is what I wanted to ask you about, Michael. Whether that would actually be enough for you, or whether if you got the million, your whole life changes. You get a taste for, I don't know, as you say, a couple of nice homes. Maybe you buy a nicer car. You start eating out more. Do you not think you get a taste for it? And then you kind of want even nicer cars, and you want even more homes. Do you not think you kind of, human nature is always wanting a bit more than what you've got?
I understand that, but I'm so determined because how I've lived in the past and grown to get to where I am. Mm. No, I wouldn't. I wouldn't change that.
I think you'd be satisfied with that.
I honestly would. Yeah. And can I just say, it's just like my father. My dad was 95 years old. His name was Bert Cook. He was an exile. He was 60 when he had me. You do the maths.
Mm.
So he was exile Royal Artillery, and he was a D-Day veteran in the Second World War. He was, I'll say it again, he was 60 when he had me. Yeah?
Yep.
Mum was a bit younger. Anyway, fabulous bloke. Very clever. The war changed his life. He couldn't read or write. He came from East End of London. He came from Shoreditch when it was bombed. I mean, before that, he was born in 1915.
Mm.
So he was born in the middle of the First World War, my father. was unfortunate enough to be at the right age to fight in the Second World War.
Right.
So he came from Shoreditch when that was...
So he didn't have much throughout his life,
He
Michael.
Had nothing.
Was he happy?
He was such a proud... He didn't want too much, Ben. He brought the family up in a correct way. I think the war changed his life.
Mm.
But I will say this. He sat me and my brother down, and I was too young to understand. I was about 8. My brother was about 12. And he put £100 on the table, and he said, I'll take away £10 for every wrong answer you give me. Okay? East End Londoner. And we were just saying, like, tennis rackets or football. And he said, what's the best thing you can give a child, excluding love? And like I said, we went through football, push bike, and so we had nothing left at the end. And he said the answer he gave was time.
Wow.
Okay, and I've
and he's right.
never, ever forgot it. And then, you've got to let me go. I became a father at 31, stroke 32. I'm 52 now, so my boy's nearly 20. I had to go through, my dad died when he was 5, my son. Thankfully, my son just about remembers him. But I made a decision because me and his mother split up. We got on ever so well, no problems at all. We really supported each other all the way through. We just couldn't make it work. But we were great parents for him, and we still are right up until now. Anyway, I had to make this decision, and I came out of a job. I had some savings. And because my ex-partner was working, I was working, I made a decision that I'm going to do what my dad said. And I don't regret one minute of this, even though that's come to catch me up.
Oh, Michael.
That's come to catch me up because I had to...
Financially, you mean?
Financially.
I bet you wouldn't change it, though.
Ben, I know you don't know me. I've got no reason to lie. No, I wouldn't change it.
No, I don't doubt you for a minute, Michael. I don't doubt you for one moment, because how much money can you... What value do you put on the time that you spend with your kids? And when you get to, hope for all of us, long and healthy lives, I hope, when we get to the very end, we look back and what do we think? Do we think, gosh, I would have a few more million in the bank? Or do we think, I wish I'd had a bit more time with my children and my family? And Michael, it sounds to me so, like, if I can, I don't know you, you don't know me, but it sounds to me, for what it's worth, like your priorities are bang on the money. Bang on the money. And I love what you said about if you use your wealth to help others, maybe that's the link. Maybe that's the connection to happiness. Thank you, Michael. What a lovely call. That's really touched me as well. I really, really sort of relate to what you said about time as well. I'm trying to do that with my son. It's not always easy. You've got phone calls coming in. There's an allure of social media. But I'm really trying to learn from what you've just said and make sure that, yes, time with him comes first. Thank you, Michael. Really, really lovely call this morning. Let's talk to Heather in Gothsoak more about Elon Musk's suggestion that whoever said money can't buy happiness was right. Do you think they were, Heather? Do you think Elon Musk is?
Good morning, Ben.
Morning.
Good morning. Obviously, you know, Elon Musk, what am I going to say about him? I don't really want to, I mean, obviously I know the subject is about him, but what I'm saying is that I've been on both sides of the coin. I'm not on a bad side of the coin, but I was brought up in a very humble beginning, and I ended up in a very good place. But money doesn't buy happiness. Empathy buys a lot. And empathy is something you can't buy. Empathy is something Elon Musk hasn't got. And I have no more happiness. Sorry, I have so much happiness taking my granddaughter to my local library. They call it rhyme time. But you have little children going with volunteers, you know, doing rhymes and things. Mm. And there's you know, can anybody just have a little contribution at the end. Now, I give more money than most, I know, but I do it in a very quiet way because I wouldn't say, oh, you know, whatever. But I think simple things are the best. And I know quite a lot of people, because of what I've done and what I do, where they're under the radar. You know, they might be able to afford a Bentley,
yeah,
but they might drive a KA. Whatever. And actually, to me, I think they're the best people.
They're not flaunting their wealth.
No, when I see people in Hollywood and, you know, driving their, you yeah. know, convertible Bentleys, I think, oh, good for you.
Yeah.
Oh, well done you. But is it well done you? Is it well done Elon Musk?
Well, if that brings them joy, if, you know, if they love driving and they love driving in a car.
I'm not a jealous person because I could afford that. Well,
yes, but
I'm not going into my wealth, but I'm not wealthy, but I'm okay.
Doesn't it depend if you're doing it just for the status or you're doing it for the joy? If you're buying a Lamborghini because you want people to see you've got a Lamborghini, I don't think that brings you happiness. If you genuinely get a thrill out of driving and you go on and bought a Ferrari, I think that is, that the motivation's a bit different. But if we're saying, you know, your point about the time with your grandchildren, if we're saying that what matters isn't money but the time we spend with our loved ones, which I completely agree with, by the way, it's a hell of a lot easier if you've got a bit of cash in the bank, isn't it? If you're not having to work two or three jobs, it's much easier to have that time with friends and family if you're financially secure.
For example, you know, on a Friday when we go to ballet,
yeah,
it's always a habit that we go up the road and I buy one of those. They're very expensive, but, you know, comics. I mean, I'm talking about £5 for a comic with plastic things on the front. You know the ones I mean.
Yep.
But she loves that. I know she's going to throw away half of it. She's not going to read it. She's not going to look at it. But she loves the little plastic thing on the front. That brings her joy for about 5 minutes. That's nanny buying that for her.
Yes.
And that brings me joy to see her have joy.
My grandma used to collect pennies. Her name was Penny. And she used to collect shiny pennies for me when I was a little boy. Literal pennies. But honestly, I'd rush around. Have you got any shiny pennies? And I was about, you know, it's about 19.
No,
I was about 7.
Small
tiny. And it literally cost her pennies because they were actual literal pennies. But yeah. I honestly, you don't have to splash the cash on kids to give them a huge sense of joy, do you? That's another life lesson that's, I think, really important. Thanks, Heather. I do think it's easier. I think money does buy you time. And that's perhaps another link where wealth can be linked to actual happiness. Lovely to talk to you this morning. Thank you very much indeed, Heather. Just want to read this before we talk about other matters. I have so much respect, this comes in from Simon in Western Australia, for Michael's call this morning. What a lovely chap with such a great moral compass. Time is so very important, and his call has really touched me this morning. Simon, you're not alone, and I'd absolutely endorse that as well. Thank you, Michael, for your call. And thank you, Heather, for yours. More to come in a moment, and we'll talk about Russia's new cyborg military pigeons. Yep, that's right. 12:48.
Coming up at 1 on LBC, Clive Ball.
Should MPs move out of Westminster whilst it's being repaired, or even relocate on a permanent basis? And how difficult is it to get a job if you have a disability?
Clive Ball at 1. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Our Queen Nana and her iron-strong will. Request list as long as her arm for a funeral. Luckily, a co-op funeral care appointment, a chat, a bit of structure, turned 1,000 royal requests into one brilliant way to honour Nana.
If it's hard to know where to start, we're here to help every step of the way. However you choose to say goodbye, we help you own it. Co-op. Owned by you. Right by you. Search Co-op Funeral Care for your nearest funeral home.
When an offender is released, the probation service keeps them on track so they can find a place to live, which gives them the stability to say no to old habits, making them more likely to attend their supervision meetings. And all of that ripples out to make the community a better place to live. Search probation service jobs to find out more. An extraordinary job done by someone like you.
Yeah, I'm one of their biggest fans. I've got all the vinyl. First saw them at a tiny little place in Camden. Then as festival headliners a few years back. Oh, now that was special. So there's no chance I'd miss their world tour. In London, Lisbon and LA. Good thing I've been saving.
From down the road to across the globe, saving gets you there. Join the millions of people already saving with NS&I. Visit nsandi.com.
At Pets in a Pickle, we know what it's like welcoming a new pet into the family. For fuss-free pet insurance policies as unique as they are, visit petsinapickle.co.uk.
Leading Britain's conversation, LBC, with Ben Kentish.
Keep your thoughts coming in on whether Elon Musk is right to say money can't buy happiness. Interesting, isn't it? I think the sort of second question that follows from that is, if it can't, and it's not wealth that brings you joy in life, then what is it? I had a few suggestions this morning. Michael says time with your loved ones, helping others, Michael's suggestion as well. Heather says being able to give to those around you and buy your granddaughter comics and so on. What is the key to a happy, meaningful life if it's not just the size of your bank balance? 03456060973. And if you think this is all a load of sort of feel good, wishy-washy rubbish, and of course it's money that ultimately brings you happiness or not, then let me know. 03456060973. Just before we do that, should we talk about cyborg pigeons? Let's talk about cyborg pigeons. Russia is apparently developing pigeons that have had chips implanted in their brain in order to allow them to be used as drones. I mean, it's pretty cruel. It's not actually that funny, but it is completely mad. These pigeons with neural chips will be able to be controlled just like an electronic drone by an operator to steer them and basically send them where the operator wants them to go via a remote controller. They have a solar-powered backpack that contains a flight control device, enabling humans to direct its path in real time. A camera is also attached to the chest. This is according to a report by the British Telegraph, based on technology that's been developed by a Moscow-based neurotechnology startup. I mean, this isn't science fiction. It's not an April Fool's story. It seems to be real. How concerned should we be about Russia's new army of cyborg pigeons? Jimmy Rushton joins me, foreign policy security analyst from Ukrainian capital Kyiv. Jimmy, these pigeons with chips in their brains, what's going on here?
It's an interesting story. I had a quick look into it, and it does seem that the underlying technology is feasible. At least in controlled conditions. And there's a long history of using animals in warfare. In fact, we've used pigeons historically for carrying messages to and from the front lines. And in fact, we have this medal in the UK, the Dickon Medal, and it's been awarded to pigeons 32 times, which is quite interesting.
Is that not more for sort of transmitting messages in the Second World War and so on?
It absolutely is. But here's the thing. Use of animals in warfare is not new. This is slightly new, though, because it's apparently using radio-controlled neural implants to control the actual motion and the flight of these birds. And so the problem that's going to immediately arise is the fact that it requires a signal. And in Ukraine, for example, jamming is a huge issue. So they're going to have to find a way to remotely control this animal in an environment where electronic warfare jamming is incredibly pervasive. So is it practical? Probably not. It's intriguing. It does seem like it's out of an April Fool's story. And Russian defense concerns have a history of announcing these relatively, interesting, to be kind, technology. And most of the time, it doesn't turn out to be as advertised.
Right. What would the idea behind these pigeon drones be? Is this about surveillance, do we think, Jimmy? Is this about, you know, attaching bombs to them? What would be the benefit of sending cyborg pigeons into battle?
Well, I think the most obvious benefit would be in intelligence gathering. Probably not in a war or battlefield situation. But if you can imagine, if this was feasible and they could deploy it, you could use it to collect intelligence on a location, an individual, without them being aware of it.
Right.
Again, the problem comes back to the signal. So if something emits a signal, which this would obviously have to do, because it's got a camera on it, and it would be live streaming a footage back to an operator, that would be detectable. So it's, yeah, there are significant problems with it. And funnily enough, again, use of animals intelligence, the CIA created, and I promise you I'm not making this up, it was called Project Acoustic Kitty in the 1960s, and it involved implanting microphones into cats, which the CIA were going to use to spy on Soviet embassies.
It didn't work.
No, because it's incredibly impossible to get cats to do anything you want them to do at the best of times. And they tried it with two cats. One, unfortunately, was hit by a car immediately as they released it outside the Soviet embassy, I think in Hanoi. And the other one, it just ran off.
Saw a mouse.
The cat and it ran off.
Millions of investment in technology gone.
Exactly. So, you know, that's the problem with working with animals. They have minds of their own. It's an interesting story, but I don't think it's really going to go anywhere, to be honest.
I mean, there's two ways of looking at this. Firstly, it's sort of, you know, an incredible scientific advance that, you know, suggests Russia's got this technology that maybe other countries don't have. The other way, I guess, Jimmy, is, well, you know, we're developing these highly, highly complex, non-detectable, you know, surveillance drones, as is the US and other Western countries, and Russia's trying to modify pigeons. Is it a sign of their weakness, in a way, as a military power?
I think it's a little bit of both. And in fact, if you want a better example of their weakness, right now in Ukraine, they are using horses to storm Ukrainian positions. They're literally using soldiers on horses.
Sort of 19th century style warfare.
Exactly. Mm. So I don't think you need to go that far to see the weakness of the Russian army in some cases, because, you know, they are still a danger. But I think in this case, it's probably this Russian company just looking for this eye-catching headline. Again, it's they're promising something which they probably can't deliver. But, you know, it's got us talking about it, so it's probably done the job as far as they're concerned.
Certainly got us talking about it. Jimmy, thanks for coming on. Jimmy Rushton, foreign policy security analyst, joining us from Kyiv. I mean, this comes in from Graham. Ben, aren't they easy to shoot down? It's cruel if they're shot. It is, Graham. I think it's pretty cruel if they have chips implanted in their brain so they can be controlled by Russian military operators as well, isn't it? Pretty unpleasant story all around. Let's come back to slightly more pleasant matters. Does money buy you happiness? Elon Musk says it doesn't. Most people this hour seem to agree. Let's see what Sharon in Colchester reckons. Sharon, morning.
Good morning. Yeah, I definitely agree money doesn't buy you happiness.
I lost my partner very suddenly last year, just a massive heart attack. And
I'm sorry.
No matter how much money I have, I'd rather have him any day than any amount of money.
Of course you would. Of course you would. You must miss him so much.
Yes, yes. It was very sudden, massive heart attack. It was, yeah, just gone, just within, just like that.
So what, I'm really sorry. So what would you say the key to happiness is?
It's definitely your family. I mean, I'm lucky. I've got two children, and they've been my rock since through all this. Mm. And you know, it's family all the way for me.
And you wouldn't try. I mean, no one would trade their kid. Not maybe some people would, but not many people would trade their kids for even Elon Musk's money, would they?
No. They have been absolutely my rock through all of this. They're amazing. They've been absolutely amazing. Really,
I'm pleased to hear it. How are you doing now? It must be still really, really tough.
Yeah, up and down. Can only get better.
Oh, I hope so. And I hope it does. And I hope it does soon for you, Sharon.
Thank you.
You take care of yourself. Poor Sharon. She's right, though, isn't she? How many of us would trade the people we love for all the money in the world or Elon Musk's bank account? Not many. Which is the sign, isn't it? That there are far more important things in life that actually do bring genuine joy and meaning and purpose than having multi billions of pounds sitting in your savings account. This comes in from Taylor in Greenwich. I do think money brings you freedom, but not necessarily happiness. What counts most is what you do with that freedom. I definitely agree with other callers that about helping other people. Nowadays, though, the problem with our society is we're much more materialistic and disposable in terms of happiness. And Mary in Oxford says, this is so pertinent to me this evening. My youngest daughter, who's over 40, phoned me to say that she and her partner had landed two eye-watering contracts on one day. She was terrified that her small staff of eight would struggle. They run a small consultancy. People talking about risk and getting rich, but they have very little idea of the impact of uncertainty, the pressure, the responsibility that comes with having money and being an employer. Mary, very much right to point out. Right. That's it for me for tonight. Thank you for your company. Thank you for a lovely conversation this hour and three really interesting conversations over the last 3 hours. Hope you have a wonderful weekend. I'll be back with you on Monday, all being well. In the meantime, don't forget tonight's show and all the others from this week on both Global Player app and the LBC app as well. Both of those available right now from your app store. Coming up at 4 this morning on LBC, Ian Payne right now. Time for Clive Ball.
Thanks very much, Ben. And coming up after the news, a new study into the revamping of the Houses of Parliament says the project could cost every taxpayer £1,000 each and take 60 years to finish. But money can be saved if MPs move out in the meantime. So should they relocate? And if so, where? Also, a report out this morning says disabled people face an average of more than 100 days wait for support under the Access to Work scheme. How difficult is it to get a job if you have a disability? And NASA's new mission to the moon, planned for a few days' time, has now been delayed again. We'll talk about the plans later and why there's a new space race to not only land on the moon, but have a base there. That and more after the news at 1 on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 1 o'clock, anger's growing among Labour MPs with calls for the Prime Minister's Chief of Staff to leave Number 10 and warnings that Sir Keir Starmer's own future is under threat over Peter Mandelson's appointment. The Prime Minister's apologised for falling for Mandelson's claims about his friendship with convicted paedophile Jeffrey Epstein before he was made US ambassador. Luke Francis, former Labour political adviser, told LBC that that apology missed the mark.
What was missing in that apology was a direct apology for a failure in judgment for even considering him for that role. The reality is I don't think this was a case of Number 10 having the wool pulled over their eyes. Mandelson has been a problematic figure for a long time. His relationship with Jeffrey Epstein was well documented. So Number 10, for good or bad, went into this knowing largely what they were getting.
A teacher who was attacked at a school in southwest Wales earlier has been discharged from hospital. A 15-year-old boy has been arrested on suspicion of attempted murder. It happened at Milford Haven Comprehensive School in Pembrokeshire yesterday. US and Iranian officials are due to meet in Oman today for talks aimed at de-escalating tensions between the two countries. America's built up a huge military presence in the region over recent weeks and has threatened strikes on Tehran. There have been thousands of deaths in the country over anti-government protests. Middle East expert Tina Azodi believes the